Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
We already know that a pandemic brought the highest unemployment rate in our country since the Great Depression. Later this morning, we will see if it has gotten even worse. Forecasters say new numbers could show unemployment reached near 20% last month. We also know the reality behind these numbers. It's the fact that the unemployment picture is even more dire for African Americans and Latinos. And we're going to talk more about that in a moment. I want to start with NPR's chief economics correspondent, Scott Horsley. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, David.
So what are analysts expecting from this new report out later this morning?
It's expected to show that May was another month of historically bad job losses, though not as bad as April, when, remember, we saw more than 20 million jobs wiped out. There's a pretty wide range of forecasts out there for May, none of them pretty, anywhere from 3 to 12 million jobs lost. And as you say, the unemployment rate is expected to keep climbing to depression-era levels.
Well, and we should say there is a lot of variation depending on where you are in the country, right?
Yeah, we've seen a spike in unemployment in all 50 states, but it has been much higher in some areas than others. In April, for example, Michigan had the nation's second highest unemployment rate, behind only Nevada. That's partly because of all the auto plants that were shut down that month. They have started to reopen, but hairdressers in Michigan, for example, are not going to reopen for at least a couple more weeks. I talked to a hairdresser in Holland, Michigan, Megan Hanneken, who says her old clients are getting impatient.
I've never felt so valued as a hairstylist, which is wonderful, but I also want to laugh when people are so upset about their hair. I'm like, you guys, it's hair.
Hanneken says she is prepared to take precautions to avoid spreading the virus when she does go back to work, but she's not looking forward to wearing a mask all day or trying to cut hair with gloves on. And it's just a reminder, David, that, you know, some industries are going to be able to bounce back from this pandemic relatively quickly. Others are going to take more time and a lot more adjustment.
Well, has Hanneken been getting unemployment through all this?
She is not, although she says all of her former salon coworkers are. So she is eligible. She should be receiving benefits. There's just been some kind of glitch there. She spent a lot of time trying to straighten it out. She's been going without pay for more than 2.5 months now.
Wow.
And she finally got hold of some law students at the University of Michigan who have been working to help people who are having trouble like she is.
And they let me know that I am not alone. There are a lot of people in the exact same boat that I'm in. It's a big mess.
Across the country, we now have more than 37 million people who are receiving unemployment benefits or just recently applied for them. David, that's nearly 1 out of 4 people in the U.S. workforce.
That's just astonishing. NPR Scott Horsley. Scott, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And I do want to bring up now the topic of race and the role that race plays behind these numbers. We have Howard University economist William Spriggs with us. He's also the chief economist for the AFL-CIO. Professor, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So we know from the numbers that African Americans, Latinos, have seen even higher rates of unemployment than the overall number. Can you just help explain why that is the case?
Well, in this case, it's for the Hispanic community, the industries in which they dominate. So they're very important to the restaurant industry. That industry lost the most amount of jobs. We have 12.6 million, before this downturn, we had 12.6 million Americans who work in restaurants. So when you shut that down, that's a sector as large as the entire American manufacturing workforce.
Wow.
So the job loss was very dramatic for them. Hispanic males who had been enjoying an unemployment rate virtually the same as white males, they had been at 3.2% at the peak around January and February. White males were at 2.9%. Now Hispanic males have an unemployment rate of 16.7%, which is actually higher than for black males. And the white male unemployment rate has now reached double digits. This is the first time ever that white men have suffered through double-digit unemployment. Mm. Black male unemployment went up to 16.4%. Hispanic females were hit exceedingly hard as well, so their unemployment rate went up to 20.2%. So for them, it's the industries in which they are located. African Americans are also important in healthcare and physicians' offices and non-elective surgeries.
Well, those are essential jobs we're talking about, some of them, right?
Some of them are, but because those offices shut down, there were losses in that area, and child care shut down, and you just talked to a beautician. So part of this is industry, but now we're shifting. That was the very early wave of unemployment, and now we're shifting to where we're seeing job loss in manufacturing and in construction, which is why the white male unemployment rate now is at this double-digit level it's never been.
Can I focus on African Americans for a moment, though? I mean, you mentioned some of those like jobs in healthcare were shut down, but African Americans are also more likely to hold essential frontline jobs, and those jobs have kept going, which makes me wonder. There's this reality: even if you are able to keep your job, if you're African American, there's a good chance that you are doing a job that puts you at more risk of getting a virus.
Absolutely, and despite what everyone has been saying that African Americans seem to be prone because of pre-existing health conditions, that's not the case in the data. The case is that African Americans are far more likely to catch the disease, and it's precisely because they have forward-looking occupations. When you look at the age of people who get COVID and end up being hospitalized in the black and brown communities, that's working-age people. For whites, it's those who are in long-term care facilities. So 64% of whites who are in long-term, who are in hospital for COVID are over 65. It's the opposite for black and brown people.
Economist William Spriggs from Howard University and the AFL-CIO, thank you for helping us understand some of the realities behind these numbers. Professor, we appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
As protests against police brutality continue to rage across the United States, some of the world's biggest brands are trying to show their solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. And while the intent may be good, many people are calling out these companies for making generic statements that they say ring hollow. This week, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez condemned, quote, bland statements with a hashtag and called for companies to show a real commitment to change. And we asked you what you think about the recent corporate responses to the ongoing protests and racial injustice.
My name is Susan. I'm in Hammonton, New Jersey. I don't care about their empty platitudes. That's just public relations BS. I want to see a diverse workforce that reflects the population and opportunities for other people and genders. I'm tired of old white men in charge.
So we decided to speak with Tiffany Hsu, an advertising and marketing reporter for the New York Times, and Angela Eikenberry, a public administration professor at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. And Tiffany gave me some examples of the type of brand statements she's seen in the past few days. And please note that this conversation contains a brand name that may offend listeners.
It seems like every brand wants to talk about this. You have Nike with an ad called For Once Don't Do It, where they're saying, don't pretend there's not a problem in America. You've got companies like Amazon and Nordstrom that are tweeting out Black Lives Matter. Citigroup put out a blog post where they repeated George Floyd's last words, I can't breathe, repeatedly. There are posts coming from Reebok, from Netflix, from Microsoft, from Disney. The list just goes on and on.
Now, Tiffany, what's interesting about this moment, and I used to cover this exact topic for the New York Times, and I remember trying to report on some of the thornier issues of race in advertising, a couple years ago, and not all brands were very eager to talk about those issues. What's changed? Why are they suddenly, these big brands, coming out and, doing this?
It's kind of a twofold thing. First, you have, generally speaking, brands becoming more comfortable talking about social issues. So a lot of people in the C-suite, executives, are hearing from consumers, especially younger ones, who are saying, look, we get that your product and your services are great, but we want to know what your values are. And so a lot of companies over the past 2 years, 3 years, are learning that differentiating based on what they believe in is a good way to set themselves apart from their competition. Now, in terms of this particular moment in time, you've got companies that want to be part of the conversation, and this unrest is the only thing anyone is talking about at the moment. And so if you're a company and you're not saying something, if you're not taking a stance on Black Lives Matter, you're going to get called out by even people who don't buy your products and your services. So it's almost as if companies have to say something at this point on this issue, right? If you're operating in the United States, you either have a lot of Black people on your staff, you're trying to target Black consumers, there's no way you can make the argument that this is not a topic that pertains to you.
Well, it's not, but I would say, I would argue that a lot of advertising is similar to media in that it too lacks a significant amount of representation of employees of color, particularly the higher up to the C-suite levels you go. So some of the criticism, and Angela, I'd like to bring you in here to talk a little bit about what some of the criticism is that we see of brands who do try to make an attempt at this type of advertising and marketing, because people would argue, you know, that it's somewhat hypocritical.
So, yeah, what we're seeing now is all these companies, as Tiffany talked about, kind of responding to this moment. And it's important that they're expressing their values. But I think there's a lot of people asking, and, you know, it was what's beyond that? What are they doing to actually address the issues? And that's where we can see that there's got to be more questioning about this in relation to the brands and how they're these companies are responding.
Tiffany, in terms of the content of some of these ads that we're seeing, I want to hearken back, if you will, to a time that a small brand, Pepsi, for example, tried to do a Black Lives Matter ad with one of the Jenner daughters and found that it fell pretty flat.
Yeah, that is a moment that will go down in advertising history as something you should definitely avoid. And yet somehow brands continue to do the same thing. So you have brands like the Washington Redskins, for example. They participated in hashtag Blackout Tuesday yesterday, where brands and just really people on social media put up a black square on their social media accounts. Washington Redskins immediately was swarmed by commenters who took issues with the team's name, which many, many people believe is racist. And they were far from the only one. L'Oreal, they posted a post that said, "Speaking out is worth it." Immediately, Monroe Bergdorf, who's a transgender model in the UK who once had a contract with L'Oreal, sent out her own post. "You dropped me from a campaign in 2017 and threw me to the wolves for speaking out about racism and white supremacy with no duty of care, without a second thought." So you have a lot of companies that are trying to hop onto this bandwagon to demonstrate that they care about this issue, often with ads and posts that don't really say a lot, and they're getting called out for it. There's even a parody ad that's gone out since all of this began, and it says, "We at @brand are committed to fighting injustice by posting images to Twitter that express our commitment to fighting injustice. To that end, we offer this solemn black-on-white JPEG that expresses vague solidarity with the Black community, but will quietly elude the specifics of what is wrong, what needs to change, or in what ways we will do anything about it."
Angela, based on your expertise here, I'm wondering, is that really what this is all about? I mean, this is something called cause marketing, right? I'm wondering, when did companies decide that they wanted to get behind causes like this? And is the parody that Tiffany is pointing out, does that really reflect a lot of the hollowness or the shallowness that could come across in some of these ads? And is that a risk?
We've seen this movement growing in cause-related marketing, especially in the U.S. It started in 1983 with American Express wanting to raise funds to renovate the Statue of Liberty. But since then, it's grown to a $2.3 billion industry. And so you could see the allure of jumping into this. But it certainly can sound hollow, as Tiffany described. And there are other kind of issues to be concerned about, right? Like that it can even not only sound hollow, but even minimize the seriousness of the, you know, the issue that we're facing around racial injustice in this case, even obscuring the issues that the corporations perhaps are participating in that could be causing the problems or being part of the problem to begin with. And even making us think, you know, perhaps these corporations are doing something we don't have to. So these are all problems that are sort of wrapped up in this cause-related marketing endeavor.
Yeah, some people, Angela, argue that not only are a lot of the companies that are creating these messages doing so without having the staff to reflect the diversity that mm-hmm. the country reflects. A lot of people would say, you know, as we mentioned earlier, that C-suites are very white and continue to be. But there's also the question of what these companies actually do and whether or not they, you know, these are multi-million dollar corporations, and whether or not just by the fact that they exist, are they not contributing to the problem themselves if we're looking at what major corporations are doing?
Yeah, exactly. Like in many cases, where as you point out, you know, there are organizations or corporations doing things that are in direct contradiction to bringing about racial justice. But then they're also, you know, they are part of this larger system of capitalist system. Systemic racism is inherent to that system. So in a way, you know, there's only so much these corporations can probably do. They should do more, clearly, but there's also obviously got to be a movement beyond what they do to, in order to create the change that's being called for now.
Does any of this really matter at the end of the day, Angela? Is anyone actually going to support or not support a product or buy a product if they see this ad or don't see this ad?
Yeah, that's a great question. We don't know fully from the research, but we do have some research to suggest that in a way these kinds of messages are just reinforcing what people maybe already think about the corporation or the brand. But does it lead to people being active in other ways? For example, giving more or being more politically active? It's the data suggests from what we know that not necessarily. In fact, it may do the opposite in some ways, that people think, okay, I've supported this brand, so I'm supporting Black Lives Matter. It doesn't, you know, necessarily work out that people are doing more beyond that to create change as they hoped to see.
And Tiffany, in your talking to brands and advertisers, are they getting their war rooms, if you will, prepared to be able to turn these types of messages around rather quickly? Because I think that's also something to note, that these are campaigns that did not take months and months and months to approve. These are campaigns, ad campaigns, that are essentially responding to the news. So are you sensing more of a flexibility or a willingness to be nimble and quick from the advertisers that you've spoken to?
Broadly, yes, especially because so many of these ads are appearing on digital platforms as opposed to TV platforms. They can be pretty straightforward and simple, and they don't take long. And I think advertisers by this point have been trained to be ready for this sort of thing. And in fact, given that we're still in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic, a lot of them had already come out with really of the moment ads. And of course, a lot of those ads were also parodied, also mocked as sounding all the same. But the fact of the matter is, advertisers have been trained to think, okay, we could come up against something that becomes a cultural moment at any time, and we need to be ready for it.
Well, with the quickness of these ads showing up on social media and online, it sounds like they're at least on the way to doing that. Tiffany Hsu is a reporter for the New York Times, focusing on advertising and marketing, and Angela Eikenberry is a public administration professor at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. Thanks to you both for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The protests against the killing of a Black man in police custody have included some destruction, and some of the businesses damaged and burned belong to African Americans. NPR's Jim Zaroli spoke with a barber in North Minneapolis whose shop was burned to the ground.
There's nothing left of Trayvon Ellis's barber shop, the Fade Factory, except a smoking hole filled with rubble.
Inside is totally burned down. Like, there was vending machines in there, display cases for snacks and clothes. There was even a snowblower in there, like literally a brand new snowblower that we used to plow the sidewalks and parking lot. Nothing's recognizable. Everything was burned to a crisp.
On Saturday night, while protests gripped Minneapolis, someone set fire to Ellis's shop. It was a sudden, brutal end to a business he's devoted his life to. At 42, Ellis doesn't just like being a barber, he loves it.
It's so, you know, enjoyable because you can actually add to people's life. You know, if they can look at themselves in the mirror or get compliments from people that see them with a nice haircut, it actually makes people more positive, more lighthearted.
When Ellis graduated from barber school, they gave him a kit with clippers and scissors. He rented space in a barber shop in a rough part of Minneapolis. In the process, he became part of a trend. Nationwide, the number of black-owned businesses grew 34% between 2007 and 2012, according to the Census Bureau, much faster than white businesses. Ron Busby, president of the U.S. Black Chambers, says there are 2.7 million black businesses in the United States.
2.6 million are not mom and pops. They're mom or pops.
In other words, Busby says they tend to be tiny. Hairdressers, personal trainers, caterers. And in today's economic crisis, they're more vulnerable. Busby says they're more likely than white businesses to use personal funds instead of bank loans. That's how Trayvon Ellis did it. He used his profits to slowly build up his shop. And he hustled. He printed business cards and passed them out everywhere.
If I was at restaurants, you know, I would leave a nice little stack of them on the counter. I would ask the manager. And then just that small conversation would lead to a client. Hey, where you cut at, man? Give me one of those. So, you know, it's if you're motivated and self-driven, which is what it takes to be a barber, the financial part of it is limitless.
This spring, the Fade Factory was forced to shut down when the coronavirus struck. It's been rough financially, but it's worse than that.
I was really bored. You know, I slept a lot, but you only can sleep so much. You only can surf the internet so much. There's only so much social media you want to feed in your brain because you can't believe everything you see or hear on there.
Ellis hoped to reopen once the restrictions were lifted, but Saturday night he got a call telling him the Fade Factory was burning. He called 911, but too many fires were taking place. The fire trucks took hours to get there.
That night, I stayed till about 3:30, almost 4 a.m. I left, went home, fell asleep for about 3 hours, came back at 8 a.m., and the fire was still lit.
Ellis says he understands why people protested.
But whoever torched that barbershop, I didn't deserve it, the community didn't deserve it, and definitely that building owner didn't deserve it.
But Ellis is already planning his comeback. A stranger started a GoFundMe page on his behalf. It's already raised more than $52,000. So Ellis will be a barber again. It's the only thing he wants to do. Jim Zaroli, NPR News.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, June 5, 2020. So I have been told. Hope folks are safe, boogieing on through spring as best we can. Another edition, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Not a broadcast for spectators, and certainly not at this moment in time. Not a broadcast for spectators. So many things happening all around the world. If we have any non-white people victims of racism, if you have figured out some things that work well for you at this moment, where you're working, if you're working with other folks, if you are so-called self-employed, if you figured out some codes, hey, make sure that I can kind of keep my distance from folks, still get my mask, my hand sanitizer, doing my social distancing, if I need to work from home, whatever it is. If you have figured out some things, you got your code down so they don't ask you about the protests. What do you think about the George Floyd? Isn't it crazy? I already got my codes. So I'm not bothered and pestered by white people or non-white people in the workplace. I certainly would not recommend talking about that to anybody in the workplace. But we'll get to all that. Not a broadcast for spectators, especially if you have codified information that other non-white people could employ to help them solve problems without creating new problems in the workplace. The number 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, we encourage folks, if you have a code, figured out some few things that work, strategies, dial in. However, if you are experiencing some problems, they're not taking the social distancing serious in the workplace, folks are coming up and pawing on you, that sort of thing, they're talking to you about the protests, want to get your thoughts, have you been out protesting, accused you of looting, let us know. We will do our best to try to offer suggestions. Again, the goal, solve problems without creating new problems. Also, make sure I give out the reminder, if you are concerned, you don't want to be identified, perhaps, you can drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have either suggestions or if you have a situation you want to share, we can read your commentary anonymously. You know, if you don't want to dial in or concerned about being, you know, recognized by your voice, untiljustice@gmail.com. Sprinkle in the folks who emailed. I'll share as we proceed with the broadcast. Just really quick with the reports. There, I've seen quite a few different outlets talking about how both the COVID-19 situation impacted black workers. What we've talked about with a number of black workers being, as they call, essential employees. So they haven't, as I've been saying consistently for about 2 months now, a lot of our COWS listeners, the folks who call in, folks who write in, they are so-called essential workers, disposable workers. That was one of our UK listeners said. But they've been, you know, out and about, you know, taking all the risks and what have you for the past couple of months. That component, maybe they get their bonus pay. Maybe they get that hazard pay. Maybe they don't. We talked to a lot of people where they were being kind of vague about that, you know, and they look like they're trying to shut down a lot of the bonus pay and such now for folks anyway as things begin to reopen. That's one component, how black employees, self-employed or what have you, have been impacted. Now we've had about 2 weeks of protests, right? We had some people even calling in saying we had some black entrepreneurs they had to shut down on how that was really difficult, right? Same thing they said in the clip about the vulnerability. Then you had 2 weeks of protests. For some places, that meant curfew. More shutdown. Some businesses, they had to, you know, close things up until all this rowdiness calmed down. That was the case here in Seattle. We had big curfews for most of the past week, dating back to, I think, since like Saturday. Not curfews for the virus, for the protests. And then, you know, as we heard, some of the black business owners even, you know, had their business shut down or burned or looted or, you know, whatever it is. I've seen a number of reports on that. Very tough time for a lot, not all, but for a lot of black workers all around the world. A lot of, you know, what we've been talking about in terms of black people being essential employees, having to get out and work, or black people being furloughed, laid off, not being able to operate their businesses. That has been the case worldwide. They have very similar reports in the UK and other places. It's just been extremely disruptive on both fronts, the virus and the protests, because the protests have spread globally as well. Let's see, the second report talking about the different companies that have spoken out. Someone raised a question about that earlier in the week, Ben and Jerry's, and, you know, they gave the long list, tacky it all is. I even said, I went to SoundCloud. I'm doing work. I don't know about, you know, Blackout Tuesday, as they call it, and all that. They got all the Blackout Tuesday, Black Friday, Nigger Thursday, Coon Wednesday. They had Blackout Tuesday, and I went to SoundCloud. I'm thinking, oh, I could do some, you know, make sure I get everything uploaded, ready to roll, share, make sure people can find. People said they couldn't find the compensatory call-in from last Saturday. Bam, made sure to share the link from SoundCloud. Got lots of options. It's up and working at Black Talk Radio Network. Should be at Apple Podcasts, working at SoundCloud. Boom, boom, think I'm going to get some work done. Wrong. They got some long, tacky statement up at SoundCloud, and they had blacked out the SoundCloud logo, and then they had some tacky shtick on the site, like, oh, I should have took a screenshot so I could read. We here at SoundCloud, we recognize that racism is a problem. And the great Jane Elliott, she once said that, they didn't quote Jane Elliott, but I mean, it was just nonsense. Like, what? And the worst of it, I went and, like I said, I'm trying to work. I'm not aware that SoundCloud and all these other folks, I don't know if Ben & Jerry's, if they gave out free ice cream for the day or what have you, but I'm trying to do work. I look, you can't even play a song on SoundCloud. Their shtick is they're blacking out the SoundCloud logo and no listening. You couldn't listen to anything at the SoundCloud site for the day, muting it out so that people could pause and reflect on the plight of the Negro. That's the best we're going to get. That's our tribute for George Floyd. This really touched our heart. Does not get any better than Tad. It was a whole lot of this week. They said Nike, Starbucks had done that before. It's not even like they did anything new. I mentioned that Starbucks did the same tackiness before. People remember that in 2015 where they shut the Seattle's finest. They shut the Starbucks stores down for a day and did their Negro training. You know, how to be kindly to the Negro. Don't call the enforcement officers on the Negro. Don't tase the Negro. Don't spit in the Negro's latte. They did all that foolishness. They called Common up to come and give a talk out here at Seattle. I don't have a problem with Common. I'm just, you know, stating for the record that did happen. But they did all that. Dr. Welsing talked about that in the archives. Nothing is any more lame, any more cheap than white businesses, these major corporations that wouldn't give a Negro a raise. They'll fire you for coming in 3 seconds late. Then I'm going to just show our dedication here to the Negro. Yes. I don't know, or I hope you all didn't work. We didn't have folks who were working on jobs where they did that, where they wanted to pause. I think we did have some people who said that they had to pause. They wanted to pause and talk about racism and how this was impacting them. If that happened, please don't spectate, dial in. I would love to hear it, especially if they had literature or they quoted Jane Elliott or something like that, or Ta-Nehisi Coates or, you know, a victim of racism. That would be good to hear, too. But if that did happen at your workplace, formally or informally, when I mean informally, if this is like casual conversation up at the water cooler, or shouldn't be too much of that because we got social distancing, right? But if they stop by your cubicle or workspace, you know, Lavernia, what's going down, you know? How you doing? You all right? Man, it's been rough. Police officers, I hate it. Was out at the protest myself. Like, that sort of thing. You can share that as well. Again, I strongly discourage participation in any of those dialogues, even with other black people on your job. Said last week you don't have friends. They could take everything you said. They could be recording it. You got Alexa, whatever it is. You are not, I don't think. You can let us know if I'm wrong, but I don't think anybody here is compensated to talk about racism on their job. So that's not even something that should be being discussed. What's the short one, Emmy said? I don't discuss politics in the workplace. Super short. Give him the other one. I always love the ignorant black person. I don't even know. I haven't even been keeping up with all that. I've just been with the Rona and trying to keep my toilet paper stock up. I mean, whew, it's been a tough year. I haven't even paid attention to all that foolishness. What do you think? And then you can hop right in the question lane. But it's not the time. You're not paid. That's nowhere on your paycheck that, you know, in order to get that raise, in order to get that nice sparkling promotion, you got to come in here and give us your views on the protests and what you think about Breonna Taylor. The, let's see, last report that we shared. Let's see, they had the Starbucks, the shutdown. Our last report, victim of racism, memory is not as, oh, the black businesses, yeah. Mr. Fuller talked about that in terms of black businesses being impacted by the protests, unfortunately, where some of them got burned down or looted or whatever it is. He talked about that before, where a lot of times where they have these so-called demonstrations and frequently violence unfolds, property destruction, that type of thing. A lot of times, even then, it still will impact other black people, victims of racism, the people who were suffering to begin with. Hopefully that has, you know, not impacted any of our listeners. Would be better if that was not impacting anyone, but I cannot say that I am surprised, stunned about any of that. If the protests have impacted your workplace situation, you can certainly share that as well. What a tumultuous week. Man, what a tumultuous year. Like, that is... All of the weeks have been tumultuous. Let's see. I'll make sure I get in one email before we get to the callers, untiljustice@gmail.com. Okay, let's see. Number one, victim of racism, non-white male. It's only Monday, but here's a racist episode from this week. A new white female social media director walked into the office and asked for social media art that says Black Lives Matter. The tackiness. Asking for art that says Black Lives Matter to post for the company Instagram account. She explained that they wanted it to be a black background with Desmond Tutu, with a Desmond Tutu quote on it, and it needed to be within 30 minutes. Desmond Tutu won a Nobel Peace Prize, I believe, the area of the world known as South Africa, when they were dealing with, I guess, formal so-called apartheid. Advocating nonviolence. I believe he's very steeped in so-called Christian rhetoric, the practice of so-called religion of Christianity, the religion of white supremacy. But I believe, yes, that is Bishop Desmond Tutu, which is interesting. Why, unless this company, do they have ties to South Africa? Why can't we, all the black people that have, you know, died and wrote and dedicated time and energy to talking about racism, white supremacy, that live on this continent, and we couldn't quote them? We got to quote Bishop Desmond Tutu. Nobel Peace Prizes. Nobel Peace Prize winners here. Why not President Obama? He said a whole lot about racism. He was talking this week. Anyway, my white female colleague, who is a graphic artist like myself, quickly volunteered for the role. Looky there. I continued working with my noise-canceling headphones and pretended I didn't hear the exchange. I already knew how little they cared about Black Lives Matter or even hiring black employees, so it was nice to not have anything to do with it. I love it. I love it. It would not have surprised me if the white woman, suspected racist who volunteered, graphic arts designer, she goes to volunteer and says, well, wait a minute. I don't know, do you have any input? I definitely want to defer because you've got so much expertise and I want to make sure that you get an opportunity to be heard and express yourself. So if you have any ideas that you'd like to contribute, I'm all for it. In fact, if you want to do the whole project, I wouldn't have been surprised for that either. But if they're all gung-ho and we got Bishop Desmond Tutu and an interracial couple, might be President Obama's white mother and he holding hands, she's taking him to school or something that shows that we're all in this together. This company, we have, you know, values in line, in place with the great Desmond Tutu and others who've worked hard to produce justice, social justice. They'll say something tacky like that. Lots of this week. That's why I said I wouldn't have anything to say. I wouldn't volunteer. I wouldn't raise a hand. I'm just aware that it happened. And keep it moving back to whatever we're supposed to be doing. They might do something tacky where they have a big presentation where they pull all this out. We want to show off the big design and have a big applause. And then they'll come, you know, I don't know how many black people they have working there, but it's probably not a whole lot. They'll come, what do you think about the art project? I know this has been such a crazy time for everybody, for you especially, I'm sure. What do you think about all this? Do you have any input? Be ready for that when I'd already be thinking of a phrase, it would probably be very short. No, I'm sure you all got it. I'll wait to see you on the final project. Something like that. You don't need to say a whole lot. They got it. You all take it away, white women. Number again, much obliged, sir. Number again is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61. If you would like to participate. Also give extra kudos for this listener who wrote in. If you have noise canceling headphones or earbuds or, you know, whatever that you wear doing work, either to block out the noise from your office or if it's you're listening to something while you're in the workplace, I would strongly recommend what it seems like this victim was doing. Have it on, but it shouldn't be where everything is totally blocked out. Like if you're listening to something, it shouldn't be that you can't hear what's happening in the office, or if you got just to cancel out the noise that you can't hear anything, because they might be talking about you. They might be planning, you know, to rob and loot. Who knows? Like you want to be able to hear what's happening. Like you can maybe, you can listen to other things. I think some people have said that they do they'll have one earbud in and the other out if they're listening to something, or you can figure out a code, but you definitely want to hear what's happening in the work like this. You definitely want to hear. They have a Black Lives Matter project that they're planning, and quoting Bishop Desmond Tutu, that would be something good to overhear if you're in the workplace. Make sure that doesn't get canceled out. There we go. *61, if folks have thoughts, input to share from, man, another wacky week in what seems like just an endless consecutive array of wacky and terroristic weeks in 2020. *61 for folks who dialed in with commentary to share. First few folks with us with a hand up, line should be open. B in Toronto, good to hear from you. Been wacky worldwide. Don't think it's just been wacky here in the U.S. Worldwide, terroristic and wacky all the way through the calendar year. B in Toronto, good to hear from you.
Great to hear from you too, Gus. And yes, wacky and tacky indeed. Worldwide, it's been pretty interesting just to see the different companies literally like vultures commodifying death of Black people in order to spruce up their image, so to speak, and to making them appear as if they're more compassionate than they really are. At the end of the day, they don't care. They just want to take out the last dollar out of a dying person's hand to make their profit. They do not care. It's been really interesting. Here in Toronto, they are bracing for the protests over the weekend that are scheduled to be happening. It's anticipated that there will be large amounts of people. However, Black Lives Matter chapter here in Toronto are stating that they have not put together this protest, so it's unclear as to who or what organization has put this together. And for all intents and purposes, it is also assumed that it could very well be the city that may have done so as a means to show support and get a lot of photo ops out of it to make them appear more compassionate again than they really are. Also, good evening to callers and listeners as well. So I wanted to share some information. Going back to branding, Skate Canada is an organization for athletes within the figure skating arena. And Asher Hill is one of three Black figure skating athletes that was a part of the organization. And Skate Canada yesterday had put out a inclusive anti-racism statement stating that they embraced this. So Asher Hill had decided to speak out against that, citing that there was hypocrisy, as he himself had attempted to speak to upper management about racial incidents that were going on, how some coaches were addressing Black athletes as N-words, how there would be remarks such as different stereotypes relating to Asian people, as well as any other non-white that was there. And he was explaining his experiences on the CBC, which is the Canadian Broadcasting Company, of how he recorded it to upper management. They did an investigation, and the investigation came back with his allegations unfounded, and that upper management, in fact, ended up blaming him, Asher Hill, for stating these allegations. So he's come out to, again, express his experiences of what occurred and, again, state the hypocrisy in terms of if anything will be done in regards to that. I'm not quite sure if anything more would be done as they've done their investigation. And now that he's publicly speaking, he, Skate Canada apparently had reached out to him, but he said that prior to them reaching out to him, it took over a year for him to get a response from them. So part of me wants to say, you know, kudos for him for taking that step of stating, you know, what these types of companies and organizations are actually doing. I almost got tempted to out the company or plantation that I work for, and how they like to cite their all their inclusion and anti-racism, and it's far from the truth. They're racist as anything, and they're not inclusive at all. But considering my circumstances right now, I'm hesitant to do so at this time, and may revisit considering to do something similar in the near future. In terms of, I do hope for those who are able to speak out against their company, provided that they have a financial cushion and no longer really needs the company. I do hope that Black workers and Black members of organizations or who work for organizations, I hope that they do speak out about these companies. As in the clip, you know, there should be more information as to how many Black people are working in those very companies that are using these statements and commodifying Black gas, really. Now, to go to the report, I haven't been back to work since last Friday. In fact, in seeing my doctor, I was diagnosed with mild depression. It's been very hard to come out of bed. I go through spells of crying, and it's just been, it's been very hard. Still hanging in there. I got a doctor's note to extend my time off. I'm still working on my exit plan. My offspring, he's such an angel. You know, he would tell me, you know, Mom, we need to get out of here. Just let's go for a walk. Let's do something. He'll try and say something funny. Actually, he's pretty good with jokes. You know, part of me feels guilty in that I'm not strong right now, but part of me needs to accept that I'm going through a tough time, and that eventually a resolution will be sought. I'm sorry if I'm not really saying my words very well. I'm trying not to cry now. Just
just very hard. I'm sorry. I'll leave the line.
Thank you kindly, B, for sharing. Man, I know last week when you were telling us you were going to take some time off from work because it had been just really tough, as it has been worldwide. Like, man, that is, it's almost an understatement with what this year has presented us all worldwide to say, man, it's been a really bad week. Like, it just doesn't capture it. So, yeah, I know last week you were telling us that you were going to get some time off, which I thought was spectacular. I guess if anything in this, I'm so glad that your son has been there to be supportive and to try to get you outside. Like so many times, we end up being in these positions where we're totally isolated, don't have folks who are checking in on us, you know, to try to see if we can eat something healthy or get outside. That can be so important when you don't have that energy or just don't feel motivated to want to do a whole lot, to have somebody who does care about you, who can kind of nudge you a little bit and let's go outside, let's get something to eat to kind of help get moving, because that can be really helpful. Just feeling a little sunshine can do a lot to improve how you feel, your disposition about things. So I'm glad that your son has been there to be helpful. I'm glad to hear that you were able to get extra time away from work, because that is super, super helpful in this situation. I'm glad you don't have to be back in that environment with all the toxicity and folks who are plotting and mistreating you on a regular basis, where you can just get more time to yourself, focus on rest, trying to eat healthy, getting rest, just having some time to meditate and heal. Really, which is probably something that many of us need to be doing, trying to get better rest. They had a clip that was just talking about that. People were advocating a strategy of dealing with all of this, trying to just get better rest, because they felt like, number one, there's evidence that black people don't get enough rest anyway because of racism. And then with all this, it's disrupted so much that they were saying a lot of people are having trouble sleep. So just being able to take time to get more rest, try to get outside with your son. I'm so glad to hear that. But yeah, no apologies for, you were crystal clear. It has been excruciating for many, many of us. I'm just glad you're able to take some time for yourself and just acknowledging, because I think for a lot of us, we just try to go through it. That's the way we kind of get trained, you know, to ignore how we're feeling. If we're having a tough time, if we're feeling depressed, to just ignore it, you know, just keep going. We're super strong. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. As opposed to, no, I'm really feeling some type of way right now, and I need to take some time to detoxify from all this and just try to get my bearings a little bit. That is so important. So frequently when we just ignore and keep going, keep going, keep going, we can just exacerbate and damage our health even more. So take your time. I'm sure there are Kyle's listeners who would be more than happy to reach out if you just need someone to chat, talk with, if that would be helpful. Yeah, let us know. Even, and I think we have Cal's listeners. I know we have Cal's listeners north of the border too. So yeah, I'm sure there are folks who'd be down to have a chat, help as much as they can to get through this, because I think lots of us are having a very, very tough time for a lot of obvious reasons. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. Did other folks commentary that they wanted to share recommendations, because I'm sure there are folks who are having a tough time right now. If you have any I guess one other quick recommendation I would give, if you are feeling a little down, depressed, or just low spirits with everything that's been happening, I know it is recommended to either avoid or minimize your sugar intake. I'm talking about that with Dr. Africa's book, but to avoid or minimize your sugar intake, that generally is not helpful. A lot of times if we're feeling bad or what have you, might say, hey, I'll get, you know, my favorite ice cream because I'm a little down, or whatever, dessert, whatever it is. Generally the record would say the opposite, and alcohol too. They would say both of those, sugar, alcohol, minimize or avoid. That can be helpful. In addition to try to get outside, get a little sunshine, a little exercise, that can certainly be beneficial. But if other folks, if they have suggestions, comments to share your own situation, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I hear?
Non-Clemson grad, greetings, sir.
Greetings, and to B, I am definitely very sorry to hear what's been happening in your situation. I think it's great that you decided to take time off of work and actually worry about yourself. At the very least, it shows at least to yourself that you care more about yourself than your job, because I'm sure your job doesn't care about you as much as you clearly care about yourself to at least take off that time. And I'm happy that you have the son there to at least look after you to a certain degree. Hopefully you do get the opportunity to get outside a little bit more and, you know, breathe. But as of right now, with all the places in the Northeast opening up, maybe there's more people around, it might be a little harder to get outside and be, you know, breathe that peaceful air with more people being outside. But I hope you get what you're looking for and what you need. I personally don't have a lot to report. There's only two new things with me in particular. Today was the last day I got to work from home, so I get to report back to work next week. And at the beginning of this week, at least here in South Carolina, the stories out of the news are starting to ramp up with more infections and more deaths from the coronavirus. But that's, for the most part, just not in the news anymore. You know, my wife and I were out and about today getting errands and getting laundry done. And it seems like traffic has, for the most part, returned back to normal, like coronavirus just simply never happened. And I believe there was an article that says Trump said George Floyd will be smiling in his grave right now because jobs are starting to return faster than people are people expected. You know, excessive tackiness on President Trump's part, but, you know, can't expect much from the president at this point. Let's see. As a homeowner, one of the responsibilities is, you know, repairing things when things start malfunctioning and things like that. So we have to get the gutters on our house repaired. This in itself, you know, gutters, that's not the big story part. It was the quotes. But so far, my wife and I have gotten two quotes to get our gutters repaired on our house. One of the quotes, a woman came to the house to take a look at the gutters on the house. And it was very interesting. She was a little new to her job. This is a white female. You know, I don't think it should be held against her or anybody for that matter when they're new to their job and still trying to figure out how to do their job and how to do themselves and aspect of it. You know, it's very hard to be a salesperson. And nevertheless, one of the things she kept telling me while she was telling me about the products that she's offering for, you know, gutter replacement was the fact that before the coronavirus, the company that she works for, which is apparently a national or maybe international company, had hired about 3,000 new employees to do the work of repairing gutters, you know, where anyone needs that kind of work done. And the company, she says, they want to avoid laying off their workers as much as possible, you know, despite the coronavirus, because obviously, you know, we've had massive unemployment happening over the last couple of months, unfortunately. Eventually, this woman will finish up her spiel, her pitch, and then she would leave. Well, I will add that, you know, initially they gave us a quote of about $18,000, and then I said, if you want regular gutters, not specialty gutters, then they quoted, you know, she said, give them a price. I said, $6,500, and said, we'll go, I said $3,500, and said, we can go as low as $6,500. But anyway, by the time she left, I was having a conversation with my wife, and I found it very interesting, the idea that, you know, I'm a black male, black wife, we live in a black neighborhood, and I find it very interesting, if not absolutely tacky, maybe even trifling, this idea that I'm expected to make a decision about taking her on as a contractor, primarily for the purposes of keeping the workers or workers in her gutter business working in a time where there is massive unemployment. And I can't imagine, at least me personally, I cannot imagine that there was even one black person that was hired. Maybe even what, I mean, 3,000 people is a lot of people. But I have a hard time believing that any person who would have came to the house to, you know, repair the gutters would have been a black person. That's just not my experience. After getting a couple of quotes from a couple of businesses, my wife and I decided that we're going to spend all this money to get our gutters fixed. At the very least, we should do our best to make sure we can find a black business or at least black people who are going to be doing the work. So at the very least, you know, black people are being benefiting from the money that's being spent. That is easier said than done. There are black contractors, but there's not necessarily black subcontractors that necessarily do gutter work, which is interesting because this is the South. There are plenty of black people around, but it seems like there are not enough black people, not even one sometimes, that seem to have the skills or ability to do the work that needs to be done, which is unfortunately, considering there's lots of work that needs to be done, and I imagine black people would like to hire other black people. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my wife.
Hello, Gus. Hello, Cal's listeners. I fortunately found a job, which is walking down the street, and came across the painting job. So I'm working with a painting crew, and this man, he's working on painting a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. It's about 1,000 square feet. And it's just down the street from where we live. And he got this job from a white man. And the white man talked him down from $1,200, which was the original price, to $1,000, to $800 for all this work. Painting, the walls, the trim, the ceiling, the doors. $800. So that's one workplace racist example is when you're dealing with a lot of white people, they don't affirm your worth or your work's worth, and so they'll try to negotiate you down. $1,200 to do all that work is very reasonable, very reasonable. But they agreed to $800, labor only, and then the white man agreed that he would supply the paint. So normally you think somebody would supply quality paint. But I guess this home will become a rental property. So the white man supplied old paint from other job sites. And if you know anything about old paint, over time it gets hot, and so the paint inside, some of it will dry up. And so if you try to just mix it up and start using it again, you'll get a whole bunch of clumps of dried up paint, and then that will affect the finished product when you're painting. So basically dried up paint requires you to strain it, or painter's term, box it out. So you get like a hose, like pantyhose or a strainer, and then you have to basically pour the old paint through the hose to get, you know, some clean paint. And then everything else is trash. So it could be dirt. It could be the dried up paint. It could be like paper or whatever was in there. Another thing with all this old paint, you didn't have like one solid 5-gallon bucket of paint. So you would have like maybe a gallon over here of this beige, 2 gallons over here of another shade of beige, and then 3 gallons of a third shade of beige. So now you're expected to mix all these different paints together, and the owner is expecting everything to look uniform. But when you're mixing paint, you have to mix them very well. Otherwise, you're going to get streaks or noticeable color variations. So, you know, this person is paying very little money, providing low-quality supplies, but expecting high-quality finished products. So the first day I'm on the job site, this is Monday, the white man arrives. I compared him to a cartoon character named Nigel Thornberry from the Nickelodeon show Wild Thornberry. He had a wide-brimmed hat on. He looked like he was going to go to the safari. And then he starts talking to my supervisor. And I'll just give you the dialogue. He complimented himself, and he was like, "I had to dress up today. Met with some very important people. I couldn't look like a bum." And, you know, if you see a painter, they're basically covered in paint on their hands, on their face. You get paint all over your clothes, your pants, your shoes, whatever. So I'm wondering, does the white man normally look like a bum? Or was this an insult to the black man, my supervisor? It just, to me, sounded like he was a plantation owner. Like he was coming down, talking to the field Negroes and Negresses and trying to, you know, just belittle them and make them feel less than. Some more stories. It just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I just did my best to, like, avoid this white man. I asked my supervisor if it was normal for him to keep coming to the job site, you know, to check the progress. And he was like, no, this isn't normal. But he kept coming back, you know, when he saw that I was working there. He kept coming back every day. And it was like, I felt like he was watching. But a couple more things. So there was another guy there. And I guess he was expected to go around and pull the staples out of the hardwood floors. So the hardwood floors throughout the entire house, except for the kitchen and the bathroom, was covered in carpet. So when you tear up the carpet, there's still staples in the hardwood floor. So this white man was going to pay $40 to pull up every single staple in that floor. There were at least hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of staples, which require you to individually remove them. And $40 is way, way, way too low. That job at least would take at least $250. So that's just another example of undervaluing black people's work. And of course, you know, the guy could have said no to doing the staples, but he did it, and he did his best to get up all those staples, but the white man came back, and he nitpicked the whole time, and I felt like he was nitpicking him or criticizing him, like, oh, you missed one, I'm not going to pay you, just so he could avoid paying this guy a measly $40. A couple more stories. So we were almost done with finishing the job. However, the white man refused to bring enough supplies. He would bring like a gallon of paint each time so we could paint the trim, like this very highlighter white, bright white paint. And I guess it was like $40 a bucket, $40 per gallon. But he would only bring 1 gallon. Even though there's trim, there's door frames that need to be painted, there's doors that need to be painted, mantle, baseboards, shoe molding, trim up top, all this stuff, he brought 1 gallon. 1 gallon. And 1 gallon barely even got half of the house. So then we needed another gallon. The white man brought the next gallon. Then we ran out of that because we had to paint all these doors that were wooden and needed to be painted white, which requires multiple coats on each side of the door and edges that you can see. And so I was supposed to go back to work today, but the white man never brought the product until about 3 p.m. I didn't go to work, but I wasn't going to a job site where, you know, again, there's not enough supplies and he's not willing to bring them. And the supervisor was calling the man and he wouldn't answer his phone. And then yesterday, the white man came by and he wanted to, you know, criticize the work that was done. Here's another example of him not bringing adequate supplies. So if you're familiar with ceiling paint, because gravity is pulling down the paint, ceiling paint is a lot thinner than what you put on the wall, which is thicker. So the white man refused to bring a ceiling primer. And the ceiling primer will cover up, like, let's say, grease stains if you're in the kitchen, or smoke stains, or if the water leaks through the roof and through the ceilings. It will cover up any stains that happen to be on the ceiling. He refused to bring a primer. So my supervisor, over the span of like a week or a week and a half, he had sprayed the ceiling 3 times, and the stains were just still coming through. And the white man was like, If you don't get in there and spray that ceiling, I'm only going to pay you $700 instead of $800 because I'm going to have to hire somebody to paint it. And so, you know, that was an ultimatum. Ultimately, the supervisor, he painted it again, but the stains are still coming through. So it's an interesting job. You could see there would be a lot of issues just dealing with this one white man from the very beginning. So if anybody is out there and they're doing contract work, whether it be graphic design or website design or painting or consulting or whatever, and you come across somebody who wants to negotiate your prices down and don't value what you're offering, just walk away. Just walk away. So money is not worth it. Money is not worth it. Just skip over the job. Like this just caused so much heartache and headache for no reason. And with that, I'll end my
question.
Was I heard non-Clemson grad, was everybody satisfied, Miss C, non-Clemson grad?
One moment, he's coming.
Yeah, you know, as tacky as the story was with all this paint situation, this story, it doesn't start with the painting. It started when this particular white man actually got a hold of the property. So this property is on the block where we live, and apparently there was a woman who lived there at some point, I assumed, or from what when I did talk to her at some point, because this is all within the last like, half year. You know, at some point she owned the house, but for some reason she wasn't able to afford the house. So at some point she ended up selling the house, but ended up being able to rent it from this white man. And at some point she was even unable to afford the rent on the house that she sold to this white man. And then one day she just had to move out and she was gone. And there was a for rent sign on the property. When I saw that for rent, I actually went to go inquire, and she told that she could not reveal the price of the rent, which was odd in itself. So I took the phone number I saw on the sign for the rent and gave it to a couple of black friends because they're looking to petition and consider neighborhood as well, too. They called, they got the rent price. It was like $1,000, and this place is not worth paying $1,000 of rent. This man is only but a symptom of a bigger problem in the neighborhood, of a whole, for example, a whole bunch of signs saying we buy houses straight cash. And there's a lot of elderly people in our neighborhood. Like the average age in our neighborhood is like in the 60s. You know, I'm 33.
Average age is 75.
And I'm 33, which is puts us well away from the average age. And the people who usually live here are people who usually are old but own that house and probably don't have a plan for it, and people who might live in the house but they rent it. And, you know, it creates a situation where a whole bunch of people, you know, predators come into the neighborhood, buy out houses from other people, and people are just, you know, losing their housing situation. The gentrification is it's really extreme here where we live, and that situation with the whole pain thing is just an outshoot from that whole situation.
Mm. Context. Wow. Oof. I had to take notes. My goodness. Let's see. I'll go in the order we got them. How about that? So, non-Clemson grad. Sorry to see working from home coming to an end. No, that was great. Not have to be around all the wackiness in the office. Being accused of being the office virus and contagion. That'll probably be waiting for you on your return. As for trying to hire black workers or contractors to come and do the work for the gutters, actually, before I get to that, the white woman, you know, we're in a system of racism, white supremacy. I have been on new jobs where I did not get the benefit of the doubt, and people were not necessarily patient. You've been trained, haven't you? Like, that was the type of attitude. Like, get out there and do it. And if you're messing up, well, man, we might have hired the wrong person. You know, this might be your first and last week. I figure a white person, like, man, you should have been adequately trained. Like, it's no excuse for you to be incompetent, even if you're new. So, a little less patient with incompetent new white employees. Anywho, Going over the whole gutter thing, I'm very sure. I haven't been to South Carolina in a minute. I am very sure they were not bemoaning the possibility of having to lay off some of their workers, and I'm sure they're fighting tooth and nail to keep a bunch of white people, probably white dudes, employed. I'm not saying it's the exact same folks, but these very folks, Miss C, non-Clemson grad, they have hired folks to come and do work on their house before. They told us about the travails with their oven. They didn't say they had black workers who came in and did the electrical work and botched it and messed it up. It was a black-owned company, but even he had white workers. And I believe it was a white worker with a Confederate flag on the T-shirt, if my memory ain't so bad. But, yeah, I mean, system of racism, white supremacy, I strongly suspect they were looking. That's white welfare right there. We got these white workers. We want to keep them employed. They'll come and do your gutters. We'll do it right. And that is no accident what he said as well about difficulty finding black workers to come out and do this. Black people who actually have the skill. Yes, I can come out and do the roof. Retired firefighter talked about that too, trying to hire black workers to come out and do his roof work a little further south in Florida. And he was saying the same thing, that, man, it's difficult. It's challenging and all the rest. Like, that is not an accident. The system of white supremacy, they often make it very difficult to get that type of skill, information. They can come out and give you all the tackiness that you want about George Floyd and all the rest of it. But information so that you could have black people who have those skills, who go out and get those jobs, do that work, maybe even open up their own housing construction business. We're not doing that. We even had other folks who would talk about just the inspection. You don't even have to do the construction work. You just come out and do the inspection to make sure that the work was done properly. Even that, making it difficult for black people to get those jobs. You might have to get special certification, that type of thing. Oh, no. Just reserved for the white people. You can go down and put that application in at the Wendy's. So that's the first half. Miss C. Wow. Nigel Thornberry. That is a great recommendation about if you are self-employed, you're going out, you're doing your estimates and what have you, and talking to these potential white client, and their penny pension, what they call it, cutting corners. You know, you're giving them an adequate price to begin with, and you know they're trying, let's bring it down. You know, he's offering to do this work for $1,200. Let's see if we can do it for $800. Can you do it for $600? I mean. Come on. And this is probably Mr. Thornberry probably has lots of money. I strongly suspect it's not someone who, you know, is struggling, you know, is waiting on his Rona stimulus check in the hope that he can get a can of beans to get through the summer. I strongly suspect that that is not the case, especially if he's part of that racket paying cash for houses. He could probably afford $1,200 and a fresh can of paint. I could be wrong. The time wasting of all of this, I mean, there's so many layers of white supremacy, like him getting this property and what he's charging the rent for. It might have been a different price. Your pals that called in to get the price for the rent, it might have been a different price if you'd had some white pals call. But so much of the time wasting of this, like, it sounds like y'all could have been done with this job, like, way sooner. If it had just been, all right, I'm going to fight you tooth and nail, and I don't want to pay you. I don't want to pay you. All right, I'll pay you. Fight about that. But just get the supplies. Like, man, you're going to go and find paint that's been sitting around for 5 years because you don't want to do it. Then I'm going to go bring, you know, a teaspoon of paint at a time, knowing that you all got all this to do. And, oh, no, I'm not going to bring, you know, what you need for the ceiling products so the stain stops showing. They're just, like, wasting time and energy. Like, that's so many different ways of not valuing. Talk about Black Lives Matter. Like, that is a direct demonstration in so many ways. I'm not going to pay you adequately. I'm not going to give you the proper tools to do the job, which is going to waste more of your time and energy because you have to stay here longer on a job where you're not even making as much money as you should be to do this nonsense. And then you got to come pull all the staples. Total economic terrorism. In so many, and then to come back, oh, you missed one. I'm not going to pay you. Oh, you missed one. I'm not going to, like, that sort of thing. I would try and identify that type of person immediately. Like, you know what? This is probably one that's not going to work. You can, I'm sure, shop around and find some different quotes. It's going to be $1,200. Thank you kindly. You have my card if you have any more questions. Like, It's not even worth it. Going through all this in the middle of the Rona? And the belittling, I'm sure him coming back and even to make a comment like that, I don't want to look like a bum, look like you niggers here, like I'm a white man. Those type of comments as well. I mean, really? System of white supremacy, just layers and layers. You said he didn't even bring the products today. Like, we're supposed to work trying to get done with this job. You don't even bring the material, so we can't even get that done. Like, just wasting your time and energy. Total disrespect. And this happens regularly with black people in a workplace environment. White people go around the planet bragging, time is money. Time is money. Efficiency, time is money. They go around bragging about that with black. Waste all their time. I'm supposed to bring them this paint back. I think I'll bring it tomorrow. Waste their Friday. Much obliged, Miss C. Non-Clemson grad. No surprise at all. That's the antics from South Carolina. I'll squeeze in the emails before I get our other set of folks who dialed in. Oh my gosh. Look at this. All right. So we got a person wrote in. This is our female caller in Georgia. So she got me the tacky statement from their workplace. Oh my gosh. Let's see it. I'll read it to you. This is a good one. So they write, I believe we can no longer be silent about the deep-rooted racism in our society. I will no longer be silent. We must talk openly about the realities that black people face. Only by having honest discussions, however difficult they may be, will we ever be able to get to a better place. Wow. Oh, and they give a little more. I'll give a little of the personal note that goes, this is like the big social media send out what I just read, and they give a little more. Hi, team. I wanted to reach out and share with you how I am feeling. The senseless deaths of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery are infuriating. Now, Ahmaud Arbery was killed in February. I just keep pointing that out. They act like that was recent. That infuriate me, it's generally like an immediate thing. Like, I'm mad by March. Ahmaud Arbery killed in February. By March, I'm ticked. Not June. Continuing. George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, infuriating, heartbreaking, and incredibly painful. What's worse is that these are not isolated incidents in the United States or the world. This racist violence risks further tearing people apart at a time when it's more important than ever that we come together. I believe we can no longer be silent about the deep-rooted racism in our society. I will no longer be silent. We must openly discuss the realities that black people face. Only by having honest discussions, however difficult they may be, will we ever be able to get to a better place. I have always believed that diversity and inclusion is a core part of who we are and what we stand for. It is an important part of what makes the company so special. But this week's events and the unfathomable pattern they are a part of have made me realize that we are often silent, starting with me, on the racial injustice and discrimination that our colleagues and friends face every day. Not talking openly about racism allows it to grow in the shadows, and helps the seed. Oh, wait a minute, let me get that right. Helps to grow in the shadows and helps seed the horrific events we have witnessed. Check those metaphors there. There are no easy solutions to these problems. Racism has been with us far too long, and its roots go deep. It's time to start having conversations about racism. I want to learn more. We need to learn more. I don't know yet where this journey will take us, but I do know we need to start it together. If we begin by working on awareness and acknowledgement, my hope is that we can get closer to a world where we value and cherish everyone and stand united in our pursuit of equality, dignity, and justice for all. To start the conversation, we will host an all-employee fireside chat. Oh, I'm harking back to Starbucks. Bring me a latte and let me get comfy. To check in with all of you and to start the dialogue on how we move forward together. Stay tuned. I will. Until then, know that you are not alone. We are family. There it is. That's my favorite workplace metaphor. We are family. Who was the father in the family again? We care and support each other. I encourage each of you to reach out, talk to your colleagues, be open to learning, have understanding and compassion. I realize that many of us don't yet know how to have these conversations we all need to have, but the first step is to welcome having them. We can make a difference. We will make a difference. This looks like someone who would be classified as white. Incidentally, this is posted publicly on LinkedIn, so I guess I could have read all this publicly because, you know, this is, y'all could go read it. Anywho, this is from one of our female caller in Georgia. This is what they had to say. Any sort of tackiness like this, if they're going to have some sort of, like I said, get-together, fireside conversation, just the titling of it lets me know that this is not serious. If I have to attend, because they might make it mandatory, I think Starbucks made theirs mandatory, I would go with a pen and a pad. I'm only here to ask questions and take notes. That's it. I don't have any statements, nothing. Even if they ask me to say something, it would only be a question. And I would have to have one at the ready in case they do call me like, hey, Gus, you've been quiet. So eager to hear what you have to say. What are your thoughts on all this? I would just like to know, what is our definition for racism? White supremacy? I had that one. That would be about it. Unless I was paying attention, there was a specific question. I would have a go-to question at the ready in case they ask me something. Other than that, nothing to say about the fireside chat. I'm not even going to be in attendance unless it's mandatory and I'm being compensated for my time. If other folks got any type of tackiness like this, feel free to email. We can share it and, you know, keep it anonymous. The email is untiljustice@gmail.com. The phone line, 605-313-5164. The code, 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks that we have missed totally, if you have comments.
Hey, Gus.
Caller in New Jersey, yes, sir.
Oh, hey, how you doing, Gus?
Right poorly, like everybody right. else.
me too. I'm definitely quite poorly. So reports from the workplace. I'm back in New York City. I told you I refuse to go to New York City. Doesn't truck. We have a helper. But we were doing home delivery, so the home deliveries have slowed down in New Jersey. The New York deliveries, the businesses starting to pick up. So there's about two trucks in New York. So my truck went out to New York, but with not that many stops. So I don't need a helper. That was my main issue. Having somebody in the truck with me during COVID-19. I'm in New York City. I also had the blessing of of seeing some of the aftermath of some of the riots of some people's favorite stores, Gucci, Prada, Nike, etc., being vandalized. And so I had the opportunity to see that. For people who think that New York City is in utter chaos from the riots, they're not. You know, there's just some smashed windows. There's just some Black Lives Matter spray painted on walls. And, you know, so that's from what I've seen. So I'm in the house and I get a text message from the HR lady who happens to be the owner's wife. Hey, caller from New Jersey. Are you okay? Yes, I'm okay. There's a lot going on. I just wanted to know, how are you feeling about what's going on? I says, there's a lot going on. I mean, you know, mixed emotions, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if aliens was to, come from the sky right now. She laughed and, oh yeah, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we seen dragons. Well, you know, so she asked me about the protest and how I'm feeling and, you know, what did I think? I just kept it brief. You know, I said, okay, I'm okay, I'm good. You know, a lot of mixed emotions. But again, you know, the way 2020 is going, I wouldn't be surprised if we seen Ellie, period. So today I'm laying down, got off work, and I seen a missed call or a text message, and I called back. Hey, HR lady, owner's wife, how you doing? Are you busy? Can you talk? Oh, yeah, I can talk. Hey, well, you know, there's a lot going on, and, you know, we want to basically show our support for, you know, what's going on, and, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement, and we wanted to basically donate, and, you know, me being, I didn't want to be a naive white woman, and I just wanted to know, do you have any ideas of any nonprofit charities that we can donate to? I said, I'm not off the top of my head. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking maybe my Cash App. But I said, no, but, you know, I'll think. So she called me back with a suggestion, and it was 100 women, 100 Black women of Bergen County. So I'm not going to deprive any Black people for any resources. But to act, you know, to pretend like I was really interested, I said, you know, let me just, you know, let me see if I can find out any other nonprofit that maybe you can donate to. But eventually I texted her. I said, you know what? The 100 Black women of Bergen County, that's a go. Send it. Are you sure? Yeah, send it. Yeah, because they seem real legit. Yeah. Send it to them. And she said, oh, they also, you know, they also have a chapter of 100 Black men of, you know, Bergen County. So I said, okay, but, so is it one organization? She said, yes, send it. This is going on during a time where I am talking to more confused friends, and the overwhelming support of white people is having a very good impression on them. And when they ask me, like, you know, aren't you impressed? You know, you see all these white people, they're on the front line. But the system of racism, white supremacy still exists. But I mean, they're putting up an effort, but the system still exists. So I say that to say this. I don't want to be somebody who's like, you know, trying to find a negative on my employer asking me to find nonprofits. But that just reinforces the fact that white people are not naive about racism, white supremacy. I'm just really trying to gather and figure out, like, what's going on. Like, you know, just, you know, you know, why white people so interested in police brutality and justice, when just a year ago they were cussing Colin Kaepernick out for kneeling. But that's another story, Gus. And so I don't ramble. That's my experience for the week on the road.
Probably still cursing Colin Kaepernick in some circles. Context of white supremacy. If a white person in a workplace context, or really any context, but especially workplace, if they asked, we want to make a donation, as you said, your Cash App, you know, my paycheck, if you all are checking on how I'm feeling, I would feel a whole lot better with a raise. Like, man, that would be directly increasing the value of this Black life. Like, hey, let's get behind that. If we can't do that, if you can think of, if there's a group that you know of, a Black group, they're doing great work, you can tell them to invest. Whoopee! If not, that gets presented. Do you know, they say, hey, do you know of a nonprofit organization that we could donate to? We love the Negro. We want to help Black people. just for giggles, if they got me, it was a day that I, you know, wanted to get a chuckle in, and you all are in the metropolitan New York area. Ooh-wee. Do you know, what's his name? That Reverend Al Sharpton. I think he has a not-for-profit.
I'm laughing.
I mean, that's what, like, I would have just said it just for giggles, just to see, like, now what about Al Sharpton? Do you think we could donate to him just to see what they say? Like, if he gets the money, great, no problem. It's not going in my mind. I don't care. If he doesn't, if it's what? I don't know now. Al, sure, he's kind of controversial. And they're like, oh, what's wrong with Al Sharpton? Like, real ignorant. Like, I don't follow him or anything. Like, I'm, you know, not one of his supporters, but it seems like he's on television. Like, he's been, you know, right out there. And I think he was at the funeral this week. I don't know. But, yeah, what about old Al Sharpton? What about him? Just for giggles to see, you know, how the response, because I know white people love some Al Sharpton. So that's just one for giggles. But talk about, it's all just been tacky to have a year of total trauma and terrorism. And then they got to top it off like the cherry on top, so to say, with just an extra heap of tacky. Like, you're going to call me repeatedly. I don't know how often this woman has called you, the owner's wife, to check and see how you're doing. Is your vehicle okay? Do you need extra mask, extra hand sanitizer, or, you know, whatever else? But you don't call me twice with everything that's happening. Whew. Again, how I'm feeling that day. What's happening? Give him Dr. Welsing's question. What's happening? And let her explain it. Like, oh, man, you know, it's George. Oh, okay. Yeah. It's wild. That's another one I'd had as little to say as possible. I would even avoid, just because with white people it comes up so frequently where we get accused of being emotional and angry. You know, I talked to a caller in New Jersey. He was emotional. I wouldn't even say, you know, it's mixed. I wouldn't even say that. I wouldn't even use the term emotion. I would say as little as possible. It's been wild. Might not even say the word wild, but it's been a lot. Wow. Just trying to figure out what's going on. Very little to say. How am I? I might have to think about, do I say right poorly? I don't know. But I would really have to think about that. Like, yeah, even that might even be a good time to, might have to take a little time and think on it. It's so much to process. I'll process and get back to you. If you don't even want to say all that, that's fine too. But that would not be a long conversation, because I just wouldn't expect that there's any sincerity in terms of how they, you know, feel about me, how they treat me, or sincerity about addressing it. As he just said, racism is still here. They've been doing this for a while, right? Racism is still here. But those would be a real short conversation. If anybody's doing any check-in, just want to see how you're doing, get you anything, brought you a KFC gift card. Just trying to figure things out. Thank you kindly. Wouldn't be a whole lot to say.
And Gus, if I could add, could you imagine, and I'm confused. I am still learning. So can you imagine a black person that's totally confused with that gesture? I mean, that woman would probably be the Virgin Mary. You know, that woman would probably be the best thing ever. I mean, you know, just the accolades and how great white people are. White people are on the front line, and just the tackiness and the confusion that right there would create.
Yep, all by design. Very powerful weapon in the system of white supremacy is having non-white people think that there are some white people who are not racist. This is kind of the opposite of the, we talk about racial focal pointing. Sometimes they'll direct and say, oh, look at the Trump. He's racist. Trump and his supporters are racist. The white extremists, the Boogaloo Boys and the Proud Boys, they're racist. Right? They'll focus and say, this is the problem. This is the opposite. Say, see, we are the good white. We're not like them. In fact, we're with you, my brother. We're with you, my sister, except for Al Sharpton. We're with you. We're going to get this problem solved, like, right now. We're with you. Racism is a problem, and Black Lives Matter. Like, super dangerous. You end up with a lot of victims who, you know, think she's with you. She's right there. She sent that donation in. And in fact, this whole company, she called twice, you know, just to check to make sure I was doing okay. Like, wow, that white woman gets it. If we had more white women like her, this problem would be taken care of. And that is not the case at all. Let's see. Much obliged caller in New Jersey. Just trying to weave in the emails as we go. All right. Female victim of racism. She writes, hi, Gus. Moore suggested Rona codification for working from home. Last week, it was recommended that people sit outside when Zoom conferencing now that the weather is getting warmer, VGQ and all, but I advise against it. I've seen a couple of people do this and have been left puzzled, alarmed. Your work colleagues do not need to know anything about your life outside of work, whether you live in an area where police car sirens fill the air or bird songs. I make a point of closing my windows or going inside to my designated spot when it's time for Zoom meetings. My racist suspect and non-white colleagues do not need to know I live in an area where the birds are happy enough to sing. That probably would, because there's been so much detail, like articles, not one, like many, 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 many articles throughout this whole, like, Rona crisis, basically, about people really scrutinizing the images when people are having to do these Zoom conferences and things. Like, oh, what's in the background there? What book is on our shelf there? Can you see the kitchen? What kind of bowl? Like magnifying glass, zoom in and, you know, check out every little detail that they can get from the frame. So, I mean, you really want to try and minimize what type of information that you give. My thought process, because I'd be someone who would sit outside if it's going to be quiet, right? Like, it's not going to be cop cars and all that. And you can sit somewhere where it's not revealing any information. You can just have a quiet spot, sit, get it done. But that is one to think on. If you live someplace where you are even fortunate enough that you can sit outside and it's quiet, racists do not intend that for niggers. Like, you're supposed to be somewhere where it's a bus depot and plane going overhead, a subway, like an interstate, like you can't even hear yourself. That's what the nigger experience is supposed to be. People riding by and volume blasting and rattling the gutters of the house. Like, that's what the nigger experience is supposed to be. Not calm and quiet where you can think, Lord, have another Dr. Welsing on our hands. She continues, this week has provided many of the examples of Mr. Fuller's observation that racist suspects position themselves on both sides of racism, white supremacy, for and against it, to the confusion of non-white people. There has been much of this in and outside of the workplace. Armed with this knowledge, I've observed and made no comment and have been able to keep my irritation level to a low. Thanks to the cows. Really, thanks to just being codified using a little counter-racist logic. Logic goes a long way. Logic goes a long way. But that's so important. We just read that tacky letter that, you know, our caller in Georgia sent in. Like, they do a beautiful job of really convincing us there are some white people who are not racist, who are really upset about George Floyd and are out to protect the Negro. Don't be fooled, and say it again, I've observed and made no comment. Brilliant. Spoken like a genius. That right there, that is the code for all of this. If you've been working from home and you're going back to the workplace, or if you are in the workplace, it is not chatter time. If they're having the fireside conversation, you are not preparing index cards, and I'm going in with my 5-minute dialogue, not at all. If anything, you might have a question or five, but this is not speechify time. This is not let me get up and show you how eloquent President Obama ain't got nothing on me. Let me get up and show you how I can wax poetically about it. Not at all. Not at all. I made no comment. Observe. Maybe ask a question. Number is 605-313. 5164, the code 564-943, pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I guess I'll give the email again. So if you want to write in, it's particularly if they emailed, if they sent out like one of these no good company statements, for sure, untiljustice@gmail.com. I'll read it on the air. I'll keep it anonymous and all that. But untiljustice@gmail.com, let us know. I'll share. Other folks who are with us, if you have a hand up, we missed you totally. Line should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, hello, Gus. This is a construction victim. I wrote in last week about the situation I had at my job. It was actually a supervisor that said those explicit comments about the robocalls.
Yes, sir. I remember.
Have you heard?
Yes, sir. We can hear you. For people listening, if you weren't listening last week, his the sexually explicit comment, just because it was so jarring, his, I believe it was white supervisor at this construction site, says he's getting these robocalls, and he I guess he's recounting to our victim here, tells him, so I said, I will suck your D-I-C-K if you cease calling in a workplace environment. Come on now. Yes, sir. Continue.
Yes. Yeah, I was going through my workplace journal. I like to have some more workplace incidents that I like to report. The first one is I had an incident at work because we have to drive like sometimes equipment over the road, and a vehicle struck the equipment that I was operating. So this was back in like mid-December. So it was kind of cold outside. So we had to wait for law enforcement, like to finish the investigation. And had three racist suspects, two men and one white woman. They were engaging in a conversation around me within earshot. And like I said, I had to wait outside the vehicle. And it was pretty cold outside. So they started talking about like the temperature, but mind you, they were in their vehicle, so they were keeping warm. And they were saying, hey, you know, I like tropical weather.
Hello?
Are you still there, construction worker? We heard tropical weather, and then it dropped. I thought that was a dramatic pause. We can wait like there was a additional punchline. Are you still there, construction worker? Uh-oh. We may have lost him. I'll look out on the switchboard, so hopefully he'll dial back in, because I always love a good racist joke or racist punchline. So hopefully he'll dial back in, and we can get him back on the line. Well, in the meantime, our female caller, hate that discontinuity, but hopefully we'll clear all that up. So in the meantime, while we wait for him, our female caller who just spoke up, did you want to go ahead and share?
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I hope she comes back. I thought it was something wrong with my computer. I'm going to that meeting on Wednesday because I'm at home. It's all at home. I am going. I'm doing today. I'm going. And because especially him and this gray guy, and Greg is black. I'm going to look him up. So Greg is black. So I'll see how that goes. And Greg, I guess he is technically like the person who wrote the letter is like the big, I guess the big boss, whatever. This gray guy is the executive VP who happens to be over to the, all the stuff that I do. I say like I do a lot for over my department, whatever. So I'm gonna go, and they have that. They publish that's public, and they send an email. They send another email following up with like rules for the meeting and this and that and words. You know, white is not a racial identity. I learned that. Surprise.
What did you just say? Can you say that again, please?
White is not a racial or ethnic identity. I'm
what
telling you that it was in there.
What does that mean?
Well, it's what was, I don't know. Black was supposed to be capitalized. Don't use African-American, because some people are Jamaican and from Bahamas. So I guess this is black. kind of code words with the stigma at work. Unless someone says African American, then you can go ahead and say that after them. Don't call people Asian. Is it Chinese? Is it Chinese, Japanese? You ever say that? They give us, you know, guidelines. But yeah, white. I was like, okay. This is new to me. I'm like, the census is going to be all out of whack. And don't use Caucasian. That's what they said. Don't use Caucasian. I said, oh, okay. There's nothing on the company website, like if you're a customer, I don't see anything. Because we're not supposed to talk about it with customers. If you do, they already taped our phone calls, but they're getting real serious. They said, I haven't been on the phone in like 2 weeks. And I don't have to go back to the 15th. So I'm hoping that this will, you know, kind of fade from people's memories and something else will happen. We don't have to talk about it at all. But I can't even say the word politics. Like, I can't say we're not allowed to discuss politics. You can't say that. Can't say Trump. Can't say Obama. There's a lot of things you can't say. Because, you know, we talk to customers. If they bring it up, we're just like, okay, you know, we can't discuss that. I guess we're supposed to discuss it internally amongst ourselves. Now all of us now are virtual almost. Because of the job I have and a lot of, there are different departments. So there are a lot of people who work virtually anyway. So I don't know who we're supposed to discuss this with. Because I'm like, is I'm supposed to be a manager? I'm like, why? you're supposed to be able to talk about it at work. And on a separate note, at the school, because I have one more class left, on Monday I went, they took my temperature finally, and they took the temperature of the students, because they were like, oh, we're supposed to be doing this, and I thought somebody stole on them. That's why they were doing this now. Somebody supposed to stole on it. I was like, it wasn't me. I said, now I'm kind of telling, but I this one was me. And I just asked them, because I have, you know, adult students. I just asked them kind of casually, did they bring up the situations on their job? And they all said no. I was like, well, they brought it up on mine. And then I kept it moving. We didn't go on about that. They go on about stuff on their own without having to, you know, go or, and, you know, bring something up. They see things a certain way on their own. But then that was Monday and Wednesday. She forgot to come to the room to take the temperature of the students. She's like, I have to come to the room. She's like, oh, well. And she forgot. So she took mine. It was real simple. They have some wrist thermometer, and they just put it on your wrist. And it was under, at our job, it's 100.4 degrees. Then I guess that's a problem. And that's that job. And actually, that's the job with the email. It's on Wednesday afternoon. Because we work from home, so it's not like it's really out the way. You know, I can just put it on Zoom or whatever and put it on my Zoom and listen. And if I have a couple of questions, because one, he's on some council, some presidential council with the president. I want to know what is he going to say if they have another meeting. Because that I do want to know. Because if you are in the presence of the president and this is a big problem, are you going to say something or is someone going to address that if you can talk to the president of the United States? And in the event that they ask, what did you do? I think I said this before some 2 years ago, same thing. If you want me to help you solve your problem as a consultant, have a fee. It begins at $50 million. I want full payment and no refunds. If that's not going to happen, then I don't know why we're doing this. Thank you.
Love it. You are not going to pay me $800 like my man down in South Carolina, like undervalue me for my work. Like, love it. Love it. Already have my consulting fee laid out. Whammo, we will have the best Black History Month ever in 2021. Guaranteed. Just hit that fee up. I love it to have victims of racism who are excited, like eagerly looking forward to counter racist events where they can ask questions and observe. I love it. Report back. Let us know. Like, I'm stymied. Like, this sheet of rule. I guess if they emailed this, I would love it to check that out. Like, what the rules are. Just, I mean, if they explain, like, how white is not a racial identity, like, that would be definitely on my question list to get that explained in detail. Like, you can't say Trump. Now, even that, the boss is going to talk to the president again, it seems. But we can't say Trump. Are we chill? I thought we were supposed to have honest dialogue. I thought that was in what I read. Like, we're supposed to have honest dialogue, even if it's challenging.
I think in a dialogue we can do that, but when we talk to customers, you know, we got can't it. Bring those things up. So that's what I mean.
Okay.
And during the conversation, I think we say what we need to say.
I see. At the fireside chat. I see.
Okay. Yeah, and other than fireside chat, so that's their phrase. They seem to like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen
the
call other things.
Mm-hmm. To me, the fireside, I thought that's like where you're with somebody cozy, like the family. We go and snuggle at the fireside and swap a Christmas carol and have a hot chocolate, or, you know, you're married, you snuggle up at the fireside. Like, I'm not at the fireside with my coworker. See, and they got that family. That's why I said correct context. They're using all these metaphors. That's another metaphor, too, because I'm sure they're not going to have a fire. It's June. But using all of these metaphors to suggest that we are closer than we are, that we have some sort of relationships that we don't. I love them just bringing it back to facts. Like, families, you generally do not submit an application to be rejected or denied from a family. I had to submit an application for this here company. Like, you all don't just welcome everybody in open arms because we're family. That's not how it works. Like, come on. But fireside chat and all that nonsense, like, how serious are we supposed to take this? Like, but I love questions at the ready. I love it. Please let us know what goes down at the virtual fireside chat. And especially if you get to get your question in about, yeah, what's going to be discussed at the next presidential summit? Like, are they talking about George Floyd, or, you know, what's going down? Like, yeah, I would love to hear the response to your question. And if you get some other questions in, that'd be great, too. Maybe you can get 3 or 4 questions in.
Well, it's pretty wide. There are thousands of people there. I think I'll be lucky to get one, so I'm going to have to be, you know, careful.
Get in your one. Get in your one. And I didn't want to lose that either, the tackiness with the COVID-19 situation, where they are doing it and not doing it. And we kind of, yeah, not really taking the Rona that serious. And then somebody ratted on them. I am all with that. Like I said, for some people, that might have to be an act of black self-respect. We've heard that from a few folks where their job, somebody snitched on them. They reported them to the Department of Health or whoever it was, like they had not taken this seriously. Make them get on their job. And then once somebody white came in, hey, get the gloves, get the sanitizer, close that lunchroom down. Then they got serious. Now, it looks like in her case, they got serious for a day and then they went back to slacking on it. I mean, there is a reason we have the worst rate with the COVID-19 situation in the world. Not taking things seriously. Number again, 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Incidentally, I have been on a number of jobs or in a number of situations where individuals do not necessarily reveal that they are Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Indian, whatever it happens to be. You don't know all that information. You would have to do some inquiries. Oh, okay, you're not Asian. You're, as I said, Korean specifically. Chinese specific, or Korean American if we want to do it that way, or Chinese American, or whatever. Like, even a dig to get that addition. Oh, you're not an African American. I need to let the police know that a Jamaican American is harassing me at the park. Got it. Or a Kenyan American, like our former president, is harassing me at the park. Got it. Not an African American. Don't want to make assumptions. Let's see. We'll see if we can nab our construction worker back so he can finish his commentary. Much obliged, caller in Georgia. Thank you for giving me the email as well. That was a hoot. Hopefully we'll get our construction worker back so we can get the rest of his commentary. Other folks who dialed in with hand up, if we missed you, line should be open.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
This is construction victim.
Oh, right on, right on. So we lost you. You were going right into the racist joke, I guess, or the punchline, and we missed. So if you, I guess, we can just start over.
Okay, yeah. Well, I was at work and I had an incident. It was back in like mid-December, so it was kind of cold outside. And I was waiting for law enforcement to finish their investigation. So three racist suspects from the company, two males were men and then one white woman, they started talking about their preferred temperature of tropical weather of 80 degrees because it was very cold outside. And I felt this was a racist joke or them practicing racism because a week later at a safety meeting, right, they had the heat on. It was between 72 and 73 degrees. And they, all three of them, was complaining about how hot it was in the room. So that's my first incident. And then my second incident, which is more recent, I was accused of not parking the machine against what they have, like a job trailer or like a Connex box. It was like a big shipping container where they store all their tools such as shovels, things of that nature. I was informed by the supervisor. So it's like 7 a.m. we have to start. So like I got there like around 6:30. So the supervisor comes up to me and says, "Hey, I just got a call from the owner of the company stating that you did not park the equipment in an appropriate place, that you pull the parking there every night." To which I asked him, I said, "Well, then I think that we should have an investigation if you want." So I took your suggestion of asking, accusations very seriously. So I did do that. I asked for an investigation to be launched, which one was, and it came back that the mechanic, which was on site at the very same time, moved the equipment to service it. But even after the investigation was concluded and I was found to be, cleared of all accusations, a formal, not really apology, but a formal, observing that I was innocent of these charges. Nothing was said about it. It's just, business as usual, go on about your day, But, when we had our break, some of the other men, they're white, they speak Portuguese, they're white people from Portuguese. They were all like laughing and making fun of it, like, "Oh man, the owner, he had you scared and this, that, and the third, you were upset." I said, "No, I wasn't upset. I'm just saying, I just take those type of things seriously." And, this one time, we had an investigation, and next time we'll have to have it in writing. They said, "What are you, some type of police or something?" I said, "It's not about being police. It's about taking accusations seriously. If I just came around here accusing you of everything, I don't think any of y'all would appreciate that." So that's just a report that I wanted to share for tonight. And thank you.
Spectacular, sir. Glad we got you back on the line. I have said for years, take accusations in the workplace seriously, really anywhere, but especially in the workplace, take those accusations seriously. Racist whites, they're accusing us of stuff all the time. And equally important, I've said for years, it's not even close, the number one component of counter-racist codification in the workplace, maintaining your composure. When the accusations come, and they're going to come, we already heard a few today. You didn't even get all the staples out of the floor. Miss C in South Carolina, you didn't even do the work, and I'm not going to pay you since you didn't do it. The accusations are going to come. Your composure so that you, what they say, fly off the handle, start cursing. I parked it right. What are you talking about, Coon? That's not the way you want to respond. it shouldn't even be a surprise, really. Like, I thought I would have been accused of about 15 things by the time we got here. So, a little overdue, I thought. All right, so what is it? I stole the car? Well, I parked it wrong. That's it. I didn't steal it. I parked it wrong. That's what I did. Okay. And it's not, you know, launch an investigation right now. You get Johnny Cochran in it. You know, it's just, oh, okay. I put the car. Well, let's investigate to make sure that this happened. You know, to make sure I'm actually guilty of what's been accused. If we can go and get information to confirm that that did take place, I'm sure they got video and camera and all the rest of it, so we can expect and make sure that that is true. Yeah, that's the way that you're going. It's not with an attitude. Just let's investigate to get to the truth of this matter. If I did indeed violate policy and procedure, hey, let me get my act together because I want to make sure I'm doing the correct thing. But let's investigate to see if this is true. Who should be against that? Getting to the truth of the matter. And then they investigate and lo and behold, no, I didn't steal the vehicle. I didn't even park it incorrectly. Someone else came and moved the vehicle. This happens in a lot of workplaces because sometimes they'll be really nasty about it. They won't be like a private thing, right, where they text you or you get called into the office privately and it's, hey, sir, how you doing? Think we, you know, said that you might have parked the vehicle. It won't be that sort of thing. Sometimes it'll be in front of the whole office, in front of the whole building, like 50 employees. What are you doing, Ted? You park the vehicle over there. You do that again. Like, total humiliation and all that. And then, find out you didn't even do it. Like, and you just got having people laughing at you and stuff. That sort of thing is so common. That has a huge impact. Even if it's not, even if they get to the end of it and, oh, you didn't scratch the vehicle. Oh, you didn't steal the car. Oh, okay. Business as usual. We just go about our day. People have joked about you and laughed about you. Might still be doing it. Had you all, wow, am I going to be fired? Am I going to be reprimanded? And I got to spend time and energy to go back?
Yeah, right.
No, that has an impact. All of this nonsense. And this is regular. Non-white people being accused of all kinds of things. You stole all the pens in the office. And you stole all the toothpicks. And you broke the microwave door. And you scratched the car door like every day. And particularly, these are environments where they got cameras. It shouldn't be that type of thing now where it's, you know, I'm just assuming you did it. Like, man, don't you have HD camera footage? Like, in the next 5 seconds, you can wind that back on your phone. Like, ain't got to be no guesswork or I think you did it. Maybe Ted, let's see. Oh, okay, so we got the exact timestamp. Can put it on social media, stream it, everything. Have it on YouTube. Like, come on. Composure. That brilliant work. I know it's nerve-wracking. That's the type of thing when we started our program when B was talking about, she also write poorly. That's a huge contributor why when you have this sort of nonsense, in addition to everything else that we've experienced this year, this sort of nonsense that you have to deal with every day. I'm just trying to go to work and do my job, see if I can get a raise, make enough money to afford a few rolls of toilet paper. And I got to be accused of this and accused of that. I got to hear your racist, tacky jokes and suck my penis and all the rest. Like, that is right there is enough to drive you crazy and have you depressed and angry and ready to do all kinds of things.
Hey, Justin, I have one last thing.
Yes, sir.
I will end with a metaphor that I heard from the men that work there. This company changes employees like underwear, and I will mute my line.
Wow. This company singes employees like underwear.
Changes.
I thought it said singes. Like, wow, I'm going to have to think about that one. Like, whoa, singes. Like, what is going on?
No, changes.
Changes. Yeah. This company changes employees like underwear. I guess so, if you're going to be going around willy-nilly accusing people of falsely accusing people, I guess so. That would drive people off of a job. Thought we had a bit of racial confusion in there too, where sometimes you're on a job with some people who don't speak English. He was saying that some of the folks who were snickering at him spoke Portuguese. In Brazil, they don't speak Espanol, they speak Portuguese. Racism, white supremacy is a global problem. But yeah, changes in, but yeah, I would leave too. No surprise at all with that sort of environment. Number again is 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let me get our last email in, and then, or at least for now, and then we should be good with the emails. Black female, victim of racism. She writes, I wrote in last week about my work from home job's tackiness. I truly didn't believe that the actual office politics would translate to the work from home job. I work for a job where I can't help anyone. All I can do is block the calls from a supervisor, which is a super tacky position to be in. That is the word of the year. I'm in the chat room asking for help, and apparently the lead didn't want to do her job and blocked me from all the chat rooms. I can't ask for help or clarification on anything. During the weekly meeting, I asked, why was I blocked? And she said it was because I was being rude. Now, last week, they accused her of being angry. If folks recalled it, or maybe, yeah. This same person wrote in last week, and she said that they were on their conference call. The white people, all they wanted to talk about was how much alcohol they consumed, getting drunk, and they've been drinking a whole lot more since the whole Rona started. She attempted to speak up and just, wait a minute. The purpose of this call was not to talk about our favorite wine and how intoxicated we've been. We were supposed to be talking about what we were going to be working on with the business plan, right? It's, oh, shut up. We got another angry black. Angry black. Take all your George Floyd bitterness out of here. We're talking about our wine list. Like, what? That's not. So that was last week. Now we come to this week and she's rude and blocked. I didn't type in all caps. I wasn't on the mic. I didn't use profanity or anything. I simply asked for clarification on a policy, and she immediately blocks me from everything. I don't understand. That is the system of racism, white supremacy. Just look at that. Can't even get through. And look at how many people have struggled just with the Zoom conference. Not George Floyd. We don't have to talk about the police. That's, you know, I'm tired of all that anyway. But just with the Zoom conferences, the penises, the swastikas, how many people have said that? People they don't even know. We're not even talking about your colleagues who are accusing you of being an angry black woman and rude and all the rest of it. Random people just coming in and want to put swastikas and call you a nigger and all the rest of it. That's been Rona 2020. Zoom. They even had to get the Zoom people on and say, why aren't y'all doing a better job of this? Letting people just come in here and practice racism and write swastikas and penises everywhere. System of white supremacy racism. We can't even do a 5-minute Zoom call without niggers being attacked. I think somebody else had wrote in too about a black female on a Zoom call where they were just being racist and making snide comments about her and the image that she had up for her background and all the rest of it. Like, you can't even get through a Zoom conference. I don't even have a suggestion for that. If you're being blocked on Zoom, other than maybe if you have a supervisor and if you could email specifically, why am I being blocked? Because those conferences, they generally have a recording of what took place and the stream and all that. So people could watch. What was she doing? Did she call somebody a coon? Was she yelling? Look, was she writing in all caps and all the rest of it? If all she did was ask for policy clarification and she got blocked, like, come on. Come on. I probably have to send an email. If you have a supervisor, I would send an email because they probably have a recording of that to just request for clarification. And if anyone else has been blocked, if you're the only person and I'm blocked for asking for a policy clarification, tell me something. I don't want to hear about George Floyd if I can't even get through a video conference without being blocked and called a rude, angry black female. Much obliged for writing in. Wow. Need more of that codification on the Zoom conferencing. My goodness. Not that she did anything wrong. Just, man, that has been a tussle getting through 2020. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, observations, suggestions, if we missed you totally, proceed.
I'm sorry.
I heard a whole lot of folks. Let's get our female caller first.
Remy?
Why not? We'll take you first.
Okay, that might be me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Gary, can I be heard clearly?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Hello, everyone. To be in Toronto, I'm sorry, this is Mel. I did want to say that I have had a depression diagnosis since I was 13. I was literally institutionalized as a minor, and I've had a white psychologist attempt to overdose and experiment on me at 16, which is a whole different story. And I've had those periods of time where I was crying every single day, like just clockwork. And I just wanted you to know that you're not alone, either on this phone line or in your experiences, and that prioritizing and possibly codifying your own healing process step by step is going to be as difficult as it is necessary. And because I've had some beginner's experience trying to find peer support groups as a supplemental alternative to finding an adequate Black therapist that I can afford, I've been looking through Facebook groups. And one that I am particularly fond of, it has the least amount of anti-Blackness that I've observed, and particularly anti-Black maleness in particular, is a group called Black Women in Mental Health on Facebook. It might be worth checking out. And also browsing through some of the groups, I wish you the best of luck, and I'm happy to hear that your offspring is being great support to you right now, and I hope that your success in persevering to even try to manage to deal with racism will inevitably inspire another person going through the same issue. And if you did want to talk to a stranger, I am through the chat. I have three pieces of local news. I'll try to make this really quick. The curfew is causing havoc here in Sacramento, where I live, while my mayor is out there kneeling like Kaepernick with some of the protesters and photo ops. Personally, in my family, we cannot grocery shop right now because the grocery store is closed at 7 p.m. and my expendable essential worker family members in particular don't get home until 9 p.m. California has been experiencing regular 100-degree weather days for the past
week.
And I cannot think of...
Mel, I appreciate all the information. I was hoping if you could just slow down a little bit. You almost sound a little nervous. Yes, just take a breath and slow down, because that is important. The curfew is messing up the groceries and everything. Just take a little breath and slow down, just a tick.
Gotcha. So it's been messing up the groceries, and I can't take walks in the evening, which is the only time it's cool in the day, and in some cases safe for some people who have breathing issues. Without being criminalized, because the city is actually encouraging people to report suspicious activity more than normal right now. And also, unlike Los Angeles and other cities that have lifted the curfew orders, I think the majority of homeless people are not even covered by the written curfew order in my specific city, which is slightly unique in California, and a good amount of the unintentionally homeless here are Black people pushing carts and, you know, well-dressed people living in vans even, like. Let's see. The second thing was, I work at home, and my so-called progressive banking institution that I use to handle my account, because they're free, has sent out a tacky statement regarding racial equality. They informed me that they are donating to the Boys and Girls Club to answer the problem of racism, which, according to the Boys and Girls Club's own document in 2017, actually, they say that they are providing services to a population that is nearly one-third white children and only consists of about one-fourth Black children. So the majority of children served by the Boys and Girls Club is not even Black children. Another work-at-home story. So I have a new white female neighbor at my apartment complex. She randomly came over one day to ask me how to use her phone with no mask on, despite saying that she is a diabetic person in the at-risk population. And she ended the visit later than I should have by stepping her foot in my doorstep and leaning in to gossip with me about her neighbors, who are from the region of the world known as Afghanistan, have loud sex and talk too loud in their language on the phone for her comfort. So my attempted solution to this has just been to wear headphones on my patio and not to answer the door anymore for that lady. And lastly, I had a general COVID tip that it might or might not be a tip, that I thought could be constructive. I saw that my local community-based credit union is offering pandemic emergency loans right now for between 0% and 5%. In our case, for $1,200 to $5,000. And my friends of the credit union also in California said that they were offering the same exact amount for a flat 6% rate. I applied for one of these for some mechanic work that I needed done, and I knew that I otherwise couldn't afford. It did involve a hard credit bill, and it did pop up on my credit report. And I don't believe the victim should take out debt at all if possible, but if you have an emergency issue right now that you would otherwise have to save months for, but that needs attention right now, or if you're trying to pay down debt and you know you wouldn't otherwise qualify for debt consolidation or a personal loan, or you can't get care credit for a tooth emergency, or you have a pet that needs surgery, just anything. These seem like excellent, timely alternatives to getting just a new line of credit if, and like really if you can, you know, afford the monthly payment. I'm not an accountant. I would definitely call and ask questions, but for me, the numbers work out well and I got 0%. Not a great credit score. And then lastly, Gus, I am rolling at the phrase, get your George Floyd bitterness out of you. That's it.
Can you give me what was the phrase again, please?
Oh my God. Get your George Floyd bitterness out of here. I'm going to use that this week. I'm just trying to get out of here.
Yes, yes, yes. Let me know. Much obliged, Mel in California. Thank you. I have it right now at the Facebook group, Black Women and Mental Health. I'm sharing it right now so that other folks can check it out. Much obliged for looking out for B's well-being. I guess, B, you can email me or what have you if you want to exchange. Mel has invested in the cow. She did our reading. She read Stupid Talk, Crazy Talk. She read Asada. It's been spectacular. Hopefully we can get her back on to narrate more, and hopefully she won't be accused of being a white person. She comes back to do some more reading. The tackiness abounds, all I can say, like, the tackiness abounds with the statements and what have you, to be expected. I'm glad that you shared the disruption about what's happening in California with the curfews, because I'd said that, like, that has disrupted so much. Like, they had, you know, the initial restrictions, which were all a pain and everybody disliked, and now they have new restrictions in a lot of places. They have curfews. We had one here in Seattle too, and 7 o'clock, like, yeah, I'm sure there are a whole lot of folks who are just getting off work and, you know, might miss out on some essential things if things are shutting down that early. So, man, I hope they will wrap all that up. So she said the mayor is out kneeling with Colin Kaepernick. I'm done. I'm done with all of that. I've seen a lot of that. They've had police officers out taking a knee and all that. They were cursing. My man said they were cursing Colin Kaepernick last year. They were cursing Colin Kaepernick this morning. And now they're going to go out and take a knee. Like, man, come on. Get off your knees and get the curfew resolved so we can get back to the grocery store at a regular time. And that's a lot of essential workers, I suspect. That would be black people who are out working and they don't get off until 5, 6 o'clock or whatever like that. And you get stuck in traffic and then bang, you can't go to the grocery store. Like, man. Anywho, the white neighbor, I guess that's one that we hadn't really thought about because that's a different type of, like, distraction. If you're in the workplace, it would be the white people that we work around that distract. If you have to stay at home, it would be your neighbors to come and, you know, try to sneak into your apartment. They always, the nosiness, like, trying to sneak in just to come to ask you a question or help with the phone or whatever it is. And then they got to sneak in so they can spy on everything, like not answering the door, not answering the phone, have my headphones. I love it. I'm not here. I'm not available. I didn't hear, like, you're not. And then to come and you're going to complain to me about some non-white people. Probably she said they were Afghanistan, like some non-white people and sexual. Gets to the genitals so quick. Doesn't get any better than tacky. Much obliged, Mel. I'm going to post the site. It is Black Women and Mental Health Facebook group. Folks want to check it out. Other folks who dialed in, if we missed you totally, if you have a hand up, line should be open. Oh, man, it was like a whole bunch of folks just spoke previously. Were there any other females who spoke up simultaneously with Mel?
Me. The Bay Area mom.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Okay, I won't take up all the time. So at my job, we're having a conversation about race, and it starts on Monday via Zoom. So I'm going to listen in. But prior to the conversation, they sent out a questionnaire asking questions about, I guess we're supposed to fill it in, and if we'd like, we can put our names in there, too, if we'd like. And I noticed that there's a lot of... I guess black women that are into the behavior health, so their fear, well, since we can talk about it now, the fear is the autistic black male. So they did a chart on how many of the children with autism are between white and black and other. So white is 51%. Not a black is half of that, maybe 25%. Spanish is half of that, maybe 15%, something like that, 14%. And then the other 1% Pacific Islander, 1%, you know, 1% sprinkles everywhere else. Now there's a fear because in real life, black males are in jeopardy of being terrorized by police officers just for being black. And because of the way autistic children respond, they may not respond. They may not respond in the manner that you want them to. So now that, since we can talk about it, because before we couldn't talk about it, I guess. But now since it's, you can talk about it, that's what the therapists are talking about. So as far as the questions about race, it's conversation about race. Well, first question, how have the recent events impacted you? Then you enter your answer. What's one thing you want others to know about your experience? Thank you for speaking your truth, because it's our truth. Is there anything we can do to better support you right now? What questions about or topics do you want to discuss in the open forum? This is Monday. Feel free to share your name if you're comfortable doing so. So, and then you submit the answer. I was at work when all the stuff popped up, and yeah. So we did have a curfew, Contra Costa County, particularly Antioch, Brentwood, because, you know, Brentwood is sundown town. So when they got the word that there could be looters and rioters, they shut Antioch, Brentwood off 6 o'clock. Whatever you got to do, you better do it by 6. So I think it may or may not be lifted by now. Oakland got shut off at 8 p.m., that county. I can't even say Alameda County. Berkeley shut closed at 6 until today. San Leandro shut down at 6 last week because they, I guess there was an issue about the black male during the virus pandemic when we were on house arrest. They killed this black male with a disability. They just killed him right in Walmart, San Leandro, California. Blah, whatever it is, right inside the store. So I guess this was the moment that maybe the agitators come and just tear up stuff. So their curfew was 6 p.m., and I don't know if they've lifted their curfew for San Leandro and Hayward, but that's 6 p.m., and we have police making sure you're in at 6 p.m., unless you're an essential worker and you have your essential worker traveling papers. So my job for me working, I guess my last week was stretched until Thursday. So 6 days from now will be my last day. I've never had supervisors shadow me the way I have with this particular case. It's every single week there's a supervisor shadowing me for at least an hour. Now, particularly because I'd requested to be removed from this particular client, I'm sure, particularly the way I work with I do whatever I have to do. I do my job regardless. So I'm pretty clever with my job. And I do have a rapport with the children. So the young male is very aggressive, and so is the young female. Very aggressive. And every time I walk in the door, give him 5 minutes. I guess the mom, she tries to separate the little boy, because he's just visually, ridiculous with the way he handles business. And the little girl, she's right behind him. So ever she just grabs me, I'm going to eat you. I'm going to eat you. And just anything I say, oh, I'm going to eat you. Yum, 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 yum. So now, today, she's taking it to a whole nother level. She's going to eat me, but she's going to use her teeth to actually eat me. I was like, oh, gee, delectable.
Yes, you're delicious. So I was just, oh, well, what else would you like to do aside of attacking me? So she's back and forth. She just really wants to do her own thing, which you can't really allow them to just do their own thing. But in this case, you go for it, girl. So she was able to keep the little boy out of my zone for about 45 minutes. So we go out for a bike ride because they know the weather better than us. So I'm sure she got the hoot that it'll be cool on Friday because, like the lady in Sacramento stated, it's been in the hundreds, hot like. But today it's right now 67 degrees. Yesterday around this time it was 30 degrees hotter. So she was pre-planned we would do this on Friday. For one, she can't handle both of the children by herself, and for two, it's just too hot. They don't want to die. So we do what we're going to do, but here he is, aggressive, poking at me. He wants to wipe his fingers from the whiteout, or not whiteout, what is that, permanent marker that he got on his finger. So he's going to wipe it on me because that's what you do. I feel like, remember the movie Richard Pryor played in? Oh, God, what was the toy? So I'm going to watch it again just because I know Lady Fuller said there's messages in the movie. So I feel like Richard Pryor. Yeah, I feel like Richard Pryor in The Toy because I feel like that's my job to whatever it is these children want to do, particularly the white children, I'm supposed to be with it. And since I don't show a lot of signs of being with it, it's a problem. So even with my supervisors shadowing me, it seems like it's a problem. Hey, because I had a shadow yesterday for an hour. You do very well with these. Are you sure you don't want to continue to work? No, I'm sure. So it's going to be a shock for the children next week because they gotten used to the toy. And so was the supervisor. I would have worked perfectly. So with that, I'll mute my line and thank you for taking my call.
Much obliged, Bay Area mom. Man, I love California. Like I've said for years, Seattle, best plantation, northwestern hemisphere, western hemisphere, at least where I've been. No contest. However, I love California. Like, love California. I live there. It's second place. Yeah, second place. California is very similar to Seattle. The whole West Coast is kind of similar. It's a little warmer down there, but it's, you know, yoga, plant-based meals, white people trying to protest. Man, I am so glad I am not in California. Like, man, I used to live. She's sitting here in the Bay Area, no less. So all of these places, like I lived, San Francisco, 415-510. I've been to all of these places, San Leandro, Haywood, the bar, that's right, you can catch the BART and do all of that, San Leandro and Hayward, and you would go right by Fruitvale Station, where they, it was Oscar Grant, right, 2009, on New Year's Day, you could just boop, 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 ride all through that, for the Bay Area. I am so glad I am not in California. If white, and that's white people, now they do have, you know, black people in Oakland, but they did a lot of racial dislocation, that has to be a lot of white people, because it was a lot of white people with Oscar Grant, it was a lot of white people. It was a black male that was shot in 2011. I just looked at his name on the, this is in San Francisco. Kenneth Harding. Kenneth Harding Jr., 2011. It's not anything to, Kenneth Harding Jr., 2011. He was shot and killed out in the street and they left the body out. And it was, I think, some little bit of rowdiness there. That was white people involved in that one too. Every time. It's white people. I think even when Trayvon Martin in 2013, it was white people running around the streets in Oakland and what have you. To have a curfew that early, you just heard Mel in Sacramento, a 7 o'clock, so right now it's 7:30, curfew. Are you serious? Because of this? Because you got white people that want to run around in the street and act a fool? Anywho, and I used to live in the Bay Area. San Leandro, the nickname, a white person told me this, and I wasn't even informed about racism. I hadn't read Mr. Fuller's work. I was super confused. She told, and this was a white educator. She was, a matter of fact, a PhD doctorate. She taught at UC Berkeley. She said the nickname for San Leandro was Klan Leandro because of the Klan presence in the area.
This is Bay Area, California. Steph Curry and the Warriors, right? Splash Brothers. Clan Leandro. And even went into more white people ignorance. She even went into more history. Was telling me about the Oakland Riders. These were right on topic. These were enforcement officers, or they were pretending that they were on duty, and they would just go out and grab black people and beat them up. They were called because the Raiders were in the area, so it was the Oakland Riders. But these were officers. They would be off duty or what have you, just like, oh, you want to go get your nigger knocker and beat down some niggers? Yeah, all right, let's do it. And they would just go do it. But that was right, I think, when I first moved. That was all kinds of different ways that white supremacy racism is practiced in Bay Area, California. That's it. So now they have a curfew. That's it. I guess we do our pause for Kenneth Harding Jr., Oscar Grant. Lots of names on that list. She took it out of my mouth. I was going to say delectable Negro, and she took it right out of my mouth. I said that last week, because she was saying that then. I'm going to eat you. I'm going to eat you. And then the violent ass, like, where this is not just joke. This is, you know, like, I'm looking to be delectable Negro. She says, yes, you're delicious. Wow. It is on the top 10 for a reason. Delectable Negro, Human Consumption and Homoeroticism in U.S. Slave Culture. Top 10, Delectable Negro, Vincent Harding Jr. So glad we read that on the book club. And this is a white child. She's not ignorant about racism, white supremacy. She's just a little terrorist, like her brother. And it sounds exactly like The Toy. I don't know if people have seen that. I guess that's one you can cue that Netflix if you want. That's like older, too. That's like 1984, 85, somewhere in there. We talked about that film with Dr. Kevorkian, in fact, where it's set in Louisiana. He couldn't even, Richard Pryor, he's a black male. He can't even get a job. They put him in a dress. He can't even get a job. He's got a degree. He went to school. He did everything they wanted. And in Louisiana, black male can't get a job unless he's willing to put on a dress and serve fried chicken to white men, which is what he does. He gets fired from that job. And then the white child says, oh, yes, I want a Negro to be my toy. You're delicious. I want to eat you. I want to eat you. And gets him to come be his toy so he can abuse and mistreat. He gets sexually abused in the film. Like everything that we talk about here, all of that right there in this film. I mean, yeah, The Toy. But that is ridiculous. And I mean, I'm sure there are a whole lot of black people. Maybe they don't know that film, but it's probably a whole lot of black people who feel, man, I am being abused and treated just like he is in that film on a daily basis by white children. He's mistreated by everybody in the film, but I mean, I'd be looking to get out of that house as soon as possible. And then have your supervisor, white supervisor, sitting at home on Zoom or what have you, with her feet propped up, watching all of this comfortably. Woo, man, oh man. That right there.
Gus.
Yes, ma'am.
Her feet are propped up. She's mad because I quit.
Oh, yeah. See, it's not. You're not supposed to have black self-respect. You're not supposed to have some sort of economic autonomy to say, I don't need this. Like, I'm good. I'm not going to be abused. I'm not going to be eaten by some racist child and her racist brother. I'm good. I don't need this. And to plan accordingly. Like, what? This nigger is supposed to be desperate. We're in the middle of the Rona. How are you going to turn down work? You're supposed to beg us to, you know, get more hours working with these little racist terrorist children. Bravo for getting out of there. Excellent job. Folks that we missed, there were, I think, were there, I don't think there were other females that spoke up. I think there were other males that spoke up.
Greetings, Gus.
Yep, retired firefighter.
Greetings to everyone. Just listening, and I applaud the patience of a lot of the victims of racism, white supremacy who are on their jobs. It sounds like the things that you have to go through on a daily basis are a lot more tougher than what it was for me on the job that I was on. And I hear it on almost every Friday. Drew Brees future NFL Hall of Famer for the New Orleans Saints quarterback. Quarterback is a natural leadership position on a football team on every level. Quickly went into his white supremacist suspect apology bag. On all levels of the sport, the locker room is kind of like left alone by the coaches, the administrators, and the players primarily conduct the culture themselves within the locker room for the most part. It may be some press in there sometimes, but a lot of times there isn't anybody in the locker room but the players. So he understands that, and he quickly brought his bag of his traditional bag of white apologies, I guess, so he can basically have a smoothest football season he can possibly have for the rest of his career, which is near the end anyway. To Miss B, once again, my statement is to, you know, hang in there as best you can. With your approval, I would offer my phone number that you can call me 24/7 if you would like. I'm not a professional at anything, including a firefighter anymore. But sometimes in the, I would figure in the position that you're in that you may not mind to, you know, talk to someone, you know, when you are not feeling well. And I would make myself available to you at any time. With your permission, and Gus has my number to share it with you. Fireside chats. From my understanding, historically, the first time that I heard about them, well, not the first time I heard about them, but from my studies, the earliest was about 70-some-odd years ago with Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Used to have them something like on a weekly basis to, quote-unquote, talk to the American people. Primarily the propagandized type of conversation on the radio. That was one of the major means of technology. He would basically spout the propaganda of the quote-unquote war effort to keep the quote-unquote American people, primarily talking about white people, to keep them focused and interested on what was going on in the different war battles that was going on around the world at the time. I would advise the lady who said that she was going to attend and ask questions. You may have to be somewhat aggressive, because in most of those type of presentations, they are already pre-organized to whereas they kind of like screen questions. So you may have to be bold enough to kind of like interrupt from that standpoint, because they have a tendency of screening people who want to ask questions. And I would dare say that some of the questions, some of the poignant questions on race and white supremacy, they don't want to get out. So you may have to just stand up yourself and just start talking, something to that level. From my experiences of being in such type of town hall, quote unquote type, or fireside chat type of meetings. And the last but not least is what I've been thinking about over the past week is the tons of overtime money that emergency services, specifically law enforcement and fire rescue, are getting for all of these riots, quote unquote, protests. They're getting tons of money that the cities and counties are paying these forces for the last week or so, and how that's going to register down to the citizens of these particular places. And that's all I have to report. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. Great point, the fireside chats used as a means of propaganda. Very important. Appreciate the encouragement for B. Seconded by all. Are there other folks that spoke up that we missed?
Yeah, I'll be heard.
Caller in Florida. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to us, the host, the listeners and callers. I as well want to send some words of support and encouragement to me in Toronto. I definitely have gone through anxiety and depression myself, so I can definitely relate to that. I have some reports I'd like to share. I spoke with the black female victim of racism, and she mentioned to me that it was two things. The first was she was approached by a white man, member of the clique, of course, and he asked her, why do black lives matter and not all lives? No, why do black lives matter and not all lives matter? And she said that, I guess she just gave a small response about our experiences and whatnot, but she said that she thought of what I helped her out with, and she asked the question. She said her question was, why do you hate me and you don't even know me? So the white guy, he didn't respond or whatever. He said, I can't think of a response to that. So the black male, he was coming out, and I guess he overheard this conversation, but I guess he didn't say anything, and he just went back to his office. The next thing she said was another person was saying that this is a white woman, and she said that she has to take herself off of five group chats. Five. So you can only imagine the amount of colossal, unjust networking being practiced. So, but she asked the question along with that, why now? And I thought that was interesting as well. My next one is, I have been going to the post office, and I found out this week that since I usually have to pick up the incoming mail, I was told to get into another line. And the service lady at the post office counter, she apologized for that. So I said, you know, no problem. And I had to get a receipt from one line, and then I had to get the mail picked up from another line. So I reported back to the supervisor, and I said, I think is going to be constructive if I go back to picking up the mail in the morning. Because I had to wait on one line, and they made me go to the back of the line, another line. So I said, I just think, once again, it'll be constructive if I get the mail in the morning, because also it was poor ventilation while I was in the lobby, and people weren't in a uniform line. It wasn't linear. People were just standing everywhere. Yeah, we had on masks or whatever, but COVID-19 and everything, I just want to make sure I'm prioritizing my safety, okay? And I made sure that I kept that word in use. And they said, oh, sure, that's just fine. Just let me know how everything goes. And then I reported back, and she said, that's good, and we'll just go with that. I didn't get any opposition to that. So I agree when it comes to mentioning safety on that. I'm going to share three. My last three is, this one is, they were talking about Polk County, P-O-L-K, toward the end of the day. And this was just one of those no response document. Two click members talking. Okay. And one says, yeah, you know, because I heard this video and it sounded like it was a black person talking. All right. And the phone, I guess, was buffering. And, her phone turned off. And she says, yeah, you know, I was just trying to listen to something in Polk County. And they said, don't bring that to Polk County. You know, they said, you're going to get blown out of the water. And the other white woman, responds saying, yeah, you know, did you see that one where that guy held up a sign saying, stay out of Polk County? All right. And a third, the new white person starts coming up with this jingle saying Polk County or something, like he's trying to make up a song. And then the fourth white person is ready to get out of that door. Almost like it's a sense of embarrassment that you are associated with these people. And it's just when I'm walking through there, it's like, oh man, I hope he don't think that I'm with these people or whatever. I didn't say a word, but I can tell what they was trying to do. My next one is the social media post. Okay. Once again, a click. This is the one that shared about the Nazi wordplay. This person, she typed in a comment saying, well, you know, I'm looking to save my family. You can save your family because I'm going to save mine. And beneath it was a picture of a gun, Smith & Wesson, with two clips. And it was a repost from somebody else because they like to do that and make it seem like they didn't post it. Okay? So I already know what I was doing. Okay, I want to shoot a nigga, okay? I screenshot it. A day or two later, I checked it and it said, oh, post has been locked. All right? So the black female that is on the person's friend list, coworker, I don't know if they had a dialogue about this or what. And what do you know? She's posting a post supporting her husband's gospel album. All right. Now, how refined and how tacky and deceitful is that? And my last one is, you know, the same person that said about the Polk County sign, she shares her own post that says, you know whose lives don't matter? Pedophiles. Now, how about that? So I screenshot that, and I just wanted to share those incidents. And I do think they're going to get exposed at some point. But, yeah, the clique is still practicing intense racism. And that's all I have. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Pedophiles? Like, what? That's two. Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear. We read that, and I get a lot of plug for the book club today. Asada, we've read that one, and Stupid Talk, Crazy Talk, we read that one. Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear, all great books. Enjoyed all of them. Mel read two of them. Gavin DeBecker audiobook was already there, but a lot of constructive information and 2 points. A coworker, social media post of a gun, and then a workplace conversation. You know whose lives don't matter? Pedophiles. That would be the sort of remark you'd like, oh, put that down in the folder. That is not appropriate for workplace, one. And then two, like, what sort of brain computer is processing? That's the response that you think of as appropriate for a workplace conversation that's ostensibly about racism and whether or not Black Lives Matter. Like, what? Write that one down, put that in the journal for the day, and Gavin DeBecker, ooh, this would be someone to watch. Wow, I would not be surprised at all if you got child pornography or anything on your computer. Like, whoa. Let's see. He had so many there. I would not invest like a half a second in explaining Black Lives Matter, racism, anything of the like to a white person or a non-white person in a workplace context. Like, to even ask that sort of question, like, why do Black Lives Matter and not all lives matter? Excuse me? Are we in the courthouse? Like, when did I say anything about Black Lives Matter? Did you hear me say that? Like, oh, okay. Like, why are you even at, like, it's even something in that. Like, why are you asking me? Like, you could go and ask everybody in the courthouse, right? And presumably it's more intelligent people here. Like, you didn't go to the supervisor, right? You didn't go ask the judge, Your Honor. Why is it that Black Lives Matter as opposed to all lives? But, like, why didn't you get his perspective? Like, I'm not answering. And if anything, I love this. She just came back with a question. Why do you hate me and you don't know me? And that was enough to shut him down. Don't even answer. Why are you even asking me this question? Like, come on, man. Come on. The tackiness abounds. The white woman who said that she had to leave like 5 chat forms or what have you, I guess ostensibly because they were misbehaving and, you know, comments that they were making. I thought that was a great question. Why now? Like, I suspect if they were practicing racism, this probably is not the first time that they said nigger or coon or something about Al Sharpton. I mean, yeah, it probably may have intensified over the last week or two, but yeah, I'm sure this is not the first racist remark that she's heard, and she may have even been lying about that. Like, I'm just going to take a break for a little while. They'll probably calm down. Like, even if that, I mean, even to announce such a thing, like, are you just saying this so that we will think you're one? That's like the, what I was saying before, like, there are some good white people. Like, are you just saying that so that we think, oh, wow, look at that. Becky is so cool. Like, she's not going to tolerate that sort of thing. She is with, that is my white sister right there. Come on. Come on. Come on. Black self-respect, safety, like, getting thing, I mean, anything, any aspect of your job or workplace duties, if you see where it's compromising your safety, speak up and say something. I mean, they regularly disparage Black people and devalue Black people. I mean, that is standard operating procedure. So if you are not concerned about your health and well-being, no one will be. Let's see. The Polk County, wow, Welsing moment. All of the bragging and boasting. That's exactly, Mr. Fuller said he had the exact same experience. That should be like painfully tragic, right? Like our repetition. Mr. Fuller said they said the exact same thing in 68. King's assassination. We wish you'd come out here with that. We wish you would come out here. We are ready for you in Polk County. We are ready. Matter of fact, they had that out here in Bellevue. I was stunned. I live in Seattle, okay? Seattle, ritzy, doesn't have a lot of black people. Bellevue is the ritzy suburb that is 10 minutes outside of Seattle. And I mean, like, you can see Bellevue from Seattle. To, like, put it real time, the University of Washington is kind of somewhat north of Seattle. I mean, you could be further, but you're heading north going to the UW. From that area of Seattle, if you are on campus, I knew people who did this. You could have class at 1 o'clock. Your previous class could end at noon. I knew people, they could leave campus, go home to Bellevue, eat lunch, and comfortably come back and be on campus ready to roll for their 1 o'clock campus. That's how close it is. Super close, 10-minute drive. They were so-called rioting in Bellevue. They had white people out on the street. They got video. I put it on my Twitter feed because I was stunned. They had full assault rifles, military gear, SUVs out in the street in Bellevue. Like, I can't, like, you would have to go to Bellevue. Like, I would have to take you out to, like, Seattle, ritzy, expensive place. Seattle is even ritzier and more expensive. Like, they have very few black people. Everything is super nice, super clean. All of the high-end stores and everything you could ask for. They have their own Apple store and everything. White armed people out in mass in Bellevue? Like, we are going to defend our turf. Wow. Anyway, so I'm totally not surprised about Polk County, nor am I surprised at the reaction in the courthouse, where they're watching this and seemingly excited, like they've broken out into a jingle, like, yeah, Polk County, yeah, Polk County, like, wow, okay, so this is speaking to you, okay, this is a part of the white ethos at this moment, like, absolutely, we're not going to put up with these Negro shenanigans, we got our fire, Welsing moment, we got our firearms, we are everybody, the white woman, everybody, we got our firearms, we are in it, Welsing moment. The religion of white supremacy, that one came to mind immediately when they were referencing Christianity allegedly and all of that. The strongest religion on the planet, the religion of white supremacy, that is what is practiced on a regular basis. I guess I'll ask really quick, what did you make of the pedophiles' lives don't matter? What did you make of that comment in the context of when it was mentioned?
At first, I thought that something is racist about this. I don't know, perhaps something about Michael Jackson. Something racist, definitely, because this person, I noticed her, the two of them, they usually have the same type of frequency in the way that they post and the type of things they post, but she hadn't really mentioned anything. So that was the first thing she even said about anything related to the protest against the racism. So I thought that was very interesting, to say the least, and I took a screenshot of that. But I haven't really been seeing some of these people very much. They work in the other group. So the supervisor now is coming in to work during both groups now, because I think they just continuously still get in trouble. And yeah, that was my reaction to it, my initial reaction.
Yeah, that is anything like that, because it's just so out of place. Things like that are just way out of context and inappropriate. I mean, that's like double. It's way out of context and it's way inappropriate for any workplace conversation. It's just like, yeah, what you're practicing white supremacy racism at minimum. It's super tacky and inappropriate for the workplace. And I mean, just, yeah, on that basis alone, I'd be thinking this is, I'm sure, some connection to white supremacy racism and your twisted racist mind. Wow, lots from the courthouse as usual. Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear, though, he talks about that, particularly people referencing, talking about bringing in firearms, magazines, literature, that sort of thing. All of that, red flags, potentially dangerous employees. He talked about that extensively. He has, matter of fact, he has a whole chapter in the book on that. Lots of constructive information. Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear, in the book club. Reading more important than watching television. I think we got everybody. Did we miss anybody? Right on. We'll be here tomorrow. Compensatory call in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. What a week, man. We will try our best to make sense of it all. I hope folks are taking the best care of themselves that they can. It is an extraordinarily stressful situation worldwide for so many reasons. I was saying, Cal's listener yesterday, it's like every day it's just something worse to add on to an already horrendous situation. So if you are feeling stressed, anxious, that is totally normal. I would say it is par for the course worldwide, unfortunately, right now. So try to get rest, try to get outside if you can. Getting a little sunshine always does a lot. It is good for your immune system and I think overall health and well-being to be able to get some of that sunshine. Like I said, avoiding that white sugar and alcohol. I get to my sobriety, but avoiding the white sugar, I think is super recommended. If you're feeling a little down, there can be that tendency to kind of say, hey, I can indulge and, you know, indulge my sweet tooth, get some of my favorite foods that'll help me feel better, which it might, you know, on a very limited basis. But even, you know, within beyond about 30 minutes, once you get that last scoopful or whatever it is in, I mean, messing your teeth up. We can't even go to the dentist reliably right now because they're, you know, discouraging a lot of those visits in a lot of places. Not to mention for your health, diet. They've been saying diet-related comorbidities and such. Lots of reasons to avoid the sugar, but especially if you know, are feeling a little depressed, feeling a little down, it is encouraged. Avoid the sugar. Avoid the alcohol. See if you can get up. Get outside, get moving a little bit. That also is rumored to be help, and you'd be getting a little sunshine too. So if you can get outside and get a little exercise, love it. But we will be here tomorrow. Tune in. We'll be hoping to hear from folks. Hope it has been a constructive investment of your Friday evening. Stay safe. I know a lot of things are still happening worldwide. Man, stay as safe as you can. These sorts of environments, it's so easy. And they've had so many reports of, you know, people that are out there who are likely race soldiers who just, you know, hey, it's chaos. I can come out with my gun and act a fool. They were doing that. They had videos of that happening here in Seattle as well. So keep that in mind. There are lots of armed race soldiers out and about. Some of them got badges. Many of them do not. Not the safest time to be out and about. That's it. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We are hurting and stressed right now, turning to a lot of narcotics, substances to try to self-medicate and deal with all of this generally is not going to be the healthiest way. Might even make things worse. In addition to being sober, I would recommend being inside. Especially after it gets dark, you know, be strategic about things. If you're going to go out and about, I think non-Clemson grad said it seemed like traffic had kind of resumed down in South Carolina. It's kind of hard to tell here. At times it seems like, or it definitely seems like it's picked up, but it doesn't seem like it's back to normal yet. So I would just be mindful. There are many dangers at this point. I'd almost be thinking the Rona's at the bottom of the list, but we shouldn't be thinking that way because it's still raging, so they say. But there are many dangers at this point. If you're going to go out, be very strategic, be very alert. If anything looks like, you know, it is untoward, might be leaning towards an unsafe situation, scrap the plan, head back home, and just try it again another day. It's too many, just no reason to take any unnecessary risks right now. If you are going to go out, though, for something important, strategic, being alert, you are sober, you are buckled. If you are driving, you are not on the cell phone. Again, just trying to do the little things to minimize as best we can any reason to be in contact with race soldiers, badge or no. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Yeah. I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.